It's showtime.
Okay, Tokyo,
South America,
Australia,
France,
Germany,
UK,
Africa.
Here we go. Head on with Bob Kincaid. 3 hours of conversation, cussing, and a discussing with America's only born and bred Southern liberal talk host. Head On with Bob Kincaid is brought to you each night by Coal River Mountain Watch. Coal River Mountain Watch invites you to become part of the solution, part of a sustainable future, part of the uprising against mountaintop removal. Coal River Mountain Watch, crmw.net. And now, from high in the hills of beautiful West Bicod, Virginia, here's Bob Kincaid on the Head On Radio Network.
Well, howdy. And here we go, off and running on this, the 17th day of March, 2022. This is The Horn. HeadOn.live is where you'll find us on the interweb tubes. That's where you go if you'd like to be part of the merry, wacky, zany, real-time, multimedia, madcap extravaganza that is The Horn chat room. And if you pop by right this very instant, you'll be greeted by early arrivers, Anatole and Roger Norgan and Squeaky, with more, I'm sure, to follow presently. And you'll be capably moderated by longtime inveterate, indefatigable veteran chat room moderator Sparky, who, having folded space because he is a third stage guild navigator, is operating this evening as Man Cave, telling me it's a beautiful day in Northern California for this St. Patty's Day. St. Patty's Day 2022. Yes. Hi, I'm Robin. And I'm sorry about yesterday, and I'm sorry about Tuesday, too. I felt like garbage on Tuesday, and then I felt even more like garbage yesterday, and maybe I'm a step above garbage today. It's got to be allergies. I mean, this is just ridiculous. Or maybe some sort of spring head cold thing, kind of. I don't know. But I was miserable yesterday. I hardly got out of bed at all. And I think, maybe that's why I'm here now, because I got a little bit, I just relaxed, recuperated, watched war porn, because that's the only thing that's on TV now, if you know, except for, you know, SpongeBob reruns. Never mind, all of that. Every program here at The Horn begins with gratitude, and this program is, of course, no different. So that means we send out thanks today to our 17th and 16th day of the month subscribers. It's a short list. Thank you very kindly to Laborman, our buddy Gary in New Mexico. Thank you to our dear sister Jude and Women Standing. Thank you as well to Reinhardt on the Virginia coast. And thank you to Mark. Thank you to Timothy. Thank you to David in San Diego. Thank you all very kindly for being partial sponsors of the program. I didn't change the fundraising goal because if I'm not here, there's no, you know, so we'll just wind up having a short month in March. But the fundraising goal is at $995. It would have been ever so much worse without the Have a Show on Me that an anonymous friend provided so that I could knock off on Tuesday and go just knock down. So thank you for that. But we're at $995, and a hell of a load of bills to pay. I'm determined to feel better, though. If you'd like to help out, remember there's a challenge for new subscribers. Every new subscriber up to $5, $10 a month subscribers gets their gift matched for the first month, courtesy of our buddy Zed out in Iowa. Yeah. And if you'd like to do that, it's real easy. Just go to the main page at headon.live and go from there. And there's a little box that says, make this donation monthly. Just, you know, click $10, make this donation monthly. Bang, done. Thank you in advance if you choose to do that. Thank you to anybody who helps us keep up with bill paying. The middle of the month gets really, really hard, really, really quickly. And it's critical that we kind of get caught up. It would be wonderful if we could. Oh, let's see, where to begin? Let's start with St. Patrick's Day. Joey says, happy St. Patrick's Day to one and all. I actually have some Irish blood in me, and I would guess that to be approximately 17% of my genealogical makeup. That raises a question. Is St. Patrick's Day cultural appropriation? I mean, when you've got a bunch of people with a lot of English in them running around wearing green and pinching the people who aren't, doesn't that smack of cultural appropriation? Or is it just a kind of a goodwill sort of unofficial non-holiday reason to drink bad American light beer that's been colored sort of algae green? Yes, the slurping sound you heard was my chicken bouillon. Bouillon. We pronounce it all Frenchy like here. Bouillon. I always add a little tarragon and black pepper and garlic, and maybe that's why I'm feeling a little better. But anyway, Jeffrey has a pat thought.
I hope you, all you out there on this St. Patrick's Day, discover your local leprechaun with his pot of gold, because that's what it'll take to fill up your gas tank today. Yes, the Republicans are outraged, I tell you, by these current gas prices. But somehow they don't seem to care too much about drug prices, like insulin costing $1,200 instead of $35, not to mention astronomical drug prices in general, the outrageous cost of health care premiums, because a ruby red Republican named Rubio, otherwise known as Blondie en Español, helped destroy the risk corridors, which helped keep premiums reasonable, and the skyrocketing cost of college tuition is no issue for Republicans. Funny how those Republicans don't seem to care about these rising costs. Well, that's a fine point, Jeffrey.
Oh, and there's Junior. Are not drug prices addressed in the Build Back Better legislation, and doesn't Joe Manchin's daughter have something to do with the exorbitant cost of insulin? Oh, good job, Junior. I mean, no, she's retired now, Junior. She's just a dowager retiree sitting around living on beans and canned mackerel. No, not that. She's not. But she's out, and Mylan Pharmaceuticals is out of West Virginia. I hope we at least have the common decency to take Mylan Pushkar's name off of the stadium where my beloved Mountaineers play football. That never sat well with me anyway. We should be calling it Ira Rogers Field or something. Maybe Major Harris Field. I don't know.
Speaking of West Virginia, on this day in 1972, Jeffrey notes, the first part of an article printed in a local West Virginia newspaper described the plight of hearing-impaired children in the state. Inadequate help was being provided, according to the report. No, hell, no wonder there are so many Republicans in West Virginia, Robin. These people just can't ever hear the truth.
Oh, that was just awful, Jeffrey. Apologize right now. Speaking of a pot of gold, on this day in 1950, scientists at the University of California, Berkeley announced they had created a new radioactive element, which they named californium. Californium is a radioactive metal that is very strong. It's a very strong neutron emitter used in portable metal detectors for identifying gold and silver ores. Californium is also used to identify water and oil in oil wells and to detect metal fatigue and stress in airplanes. And, oh, look, well, there's our favorite little lady, Joey Two the Kangaroo.
Thank you, Jay. It was on this day in 1942, just 6 days after departing the Philippines during World War II, General Douglas MacArthur arrived in Australia to become Supreme Commander of the Allied Forces in the Southwest Pacific Theater.
Well, theater, you say, Joey, too. I didn't know that General MacArthur was a thespian.
I'm not sure he was a crisis actor, but he didn't know how to act in a crisis. All I know is this. With a name like MacArthur, he had to be Irish.
Well, speaking of theater and the arts, the National Gallery of Art opened in Washington, D.C. on this day in 1941.
Joey notes, it was wonderful to see the young woman with her sign on the Russian news protesting the war. Has anybody seen her since?
That was a bold move by the young woman. She was brave, and I hope that boldness does not lead to her grave.
Well, Junior, that goes without saying. Jeffrey, with some grave thoughts and some serious gravitas.
Yeah, speaking of grave thoughts, it was so good to see President Joe Biden label Putin a war criminal. Speaking of war criminals, it was on this day back in 2003, edging to the brink of war, Supreme Court appointed President and war criminal W. gave Saddam Hussein 48 hours to leave Iraq. Iraq rejected Bush's ultimatum, stating that a U.S. attack intending to force Saddam from power would be a grave mistake. Well, grave was the operative word, considering they literally found Hussein in a grave.
It was a spider hole.
And ended up in his final grave about 4 years later. Hopefully the very same demise will come to Putin.
And Junior, wrapping things up.
I hope they can put the nails in Putin's coffin, too. That would be quite an undertaking, considering he's the world's ultimate thorn in the side.
And, well, this has been Joey's Journal for Thorn in the Side, Thursday, the 17th day of March, 2022, St. Patrick's Day, with Jeffrey giving a St. Pat on the back to the courageous Russian woman with the sign. And there's a $10 St. Pat on the back challenge on the table. If that gets met, we'll get down, and I miscut, so we are at 975, and the challenge gets met, we'll be down to 955, and every penny counts right now. It so, so very much does. Thank you, Jeffrey. Thank you, Joey. Thank you, Junior. Thank you.
Chai, too.
Yes, absolutely. Thank you all. Yeah, Lee in New York says, St. Patrick's Day, any excuse to drink? Yeah, never drink without a reason. Sun's up, mail's in, somebody's birthday somewhere. 5 o'clock somewhere to refer back to the famous song of decades ago now. Kind of blows my mind. But all of that having been said, it is a... It's a busy day of war porn. And what Joey referred to is, the question was asked of President Biden, do you think Vladimir Putin is a war criminal? And he said, well, yeah. And the question then becomes, is he or isn't he? Targeting a theater that is marked so that it can be read from the air to read, children, children, and bombing it into the Stone Age anyway. Now the Ukrainians have did announce that it had a basement, and the people who were taking refuge in the theater were in the basement, and no one died, but not for want of trying on the part of Putin. But that having been said, and I'm not Monday morning quarterbacking this, but was it wise for President Biden to say that Putin is in fact a war criminal? Sorry, the sneezing isn't over. There will be some pregnant pauses. Oh, well, that one didn't happen. That was an abortive sneeze. What I mean by that is when you say, well, he's a war criminal, doesn't that kind of push him further into a corner? That he might have that he would have to win, or perhaps stand in the dock at The Hague. So I don't know. It somehow or another there was something, because I mean it's a technical legal term. I know it doesn't sound like it, but it is. War criminal is a term of international, as is war crime, as is crime of aggression. And it seems that that is best left to a prosecution and a judge. But I understand it's an emotional issue. It's terribly emotional. I would have no problem saying the same thing he did. And I'm certainly not criticizing him for saying it. I'm just wondering if it makes things worse or better, or if the status quo ante simply stays the same. I don't know. So there's that. And then there's the questions of the actual war crimes themselves. Not just a crime against humanity, not just war crimes, but a crime of aggression. Because there was nothing done by Ukraine to bring this on. It was, just like Iraq in 2003, a war of choice. And of course, we sitting here can proudly note that we were opposed to that war, too. Because we are not stupid people. And frankly, if they wanted to haul old Richard B. Dick, big-time Count Dicula, genie before the Hague, I'm good with that. Same with George W. Yeah, clean the lot of them out. I mean, George can go on painting watercolors of his toe in a cell at the Hague. Yeah, maybe this isn't politically popular, but somehow or another, I feel really silly saying this has to stop. But it feels like that. But this was an unprovoked act of aggression. And we keep hearing that negotiators are getting close to a whatever. But the fact of the matter is, Putin's just stalling for time because he's got 700,000 more troops in reserve that he's trying to get into logistical place. But I would be remiss if I did not mention an article that I've seen in a couple of different places by Chris Hedges. Chris Hedges is probably America's most prominent public intellectual nihilist. It was a long, long time ago now when I sat in an auditorium on the campus of West Virginia State University and heard him say that people in tormented Appalachian communities beset by the daily bombing of mountaintop removal had every right in the world to take up arms and start taking pot shots at the coal companies. Sounded almost eager. That would, of course, brought down untold horror upon those communities. But Chris Hedges is now saying this war will lead to the doom of planet Earth, yada yada yada, and he may be right. And of course, he wraps it up in plaudits and platitudes such as Central European states should never have been admitted to NATO. And notes that a lot of old cold warriors, including Henry Kissinger, thought it was a terrible idea. It's kind of weird to see somebody like Chris Hedges saying that Henry Kissinger was right about something. He wraps in Afghanistan and he wraps in Iraq. And it troubles me. And this is all after the fact. When the missiles are already flying, people are already dying, starving, freezing, and try as I might, when I read the article by Chris Hedges, I couldn't see where it came to anything. I don't know what a I don't know what a peace would look like. I don't know if there can be a peace now that Putin has apparently gone around the bend. I mean, do we just turn off all the sanctions and let him have Donetsk and, you know, Donbass and Luhansk and say, "Yeah, whatever land you took, you get to keep." I mean, do we apply the Israeli rule and say, "Go and sin no more"? How's that worked out for the Palestinians? And yeah, I'll say this: I see the horror that is being rained down upon Ukraine, and the anguish that can be found on the lips of the majority of Americans. And something in me wants to say, hey, that's just another day in Gaza. That's any day that ends in Y in the occupied territories. What's the big diff?
Ooh, I bet I know.
And then, of course, people like Alexandria Ocasio-Cortez has brought up, because she is wildly intelligent and doesn't miss obvious things either, that the response to the idea of Ukrainian refugees and bringing them to the United States is wildly different from the American and particularly Republican attitude toward bringing Syrian refugees into the United States. I mean, if I didn't know better, I'd swear it had something to do with, I don't know, skin color or maybe religion. Maybe we'll sort that out later in the conversation. And one other thing, one of the things that makes me crazy about having to miss a broadcast is the stuff that might get blown past in the course of the 24 hours, if it's not 24-second, news cycle. And so this one, and it's not getting that much play. It's the damnedest thing. So Putin made a genuinely madcap speech and I guess, you know, everybody there in Mother Russia got to watch it, and he used a phrase that the little homicidal maniac with the Charlie Chaplin mustache was using 80 years ago, talking about how there had to be self-purification. And he used some language that old Joe the Georgian had used long about 1939 in the Soviet Union. In 1939, that's back when Hitler and Stalin were, you know, buddies. And apparently had a lot of the same ideas, with slightly different philosophies. And because my brain works in such a funny way, when Putin was quoted as saying that too many Russians are stopped and eat foie gras and caviar, somehow or another, my mind turned backward, O time in thy flight. My mind turned to George H.W. Bush, old Pappy Bush, another war criminal, when he was bitterly complaining about the tasseled loafered trial lawyers. Remember that? Maybe it made an impression on me because way back then, I was, in fact, a trial lawyer who wore tasseled loafers. Ooh, I liked them, too. They were about the most comfortable dress shoes I'd ever owned. This impulse of authoritarians, and he was one, H.W. was, that Kennebunkport tourist, toward deriding others for behaviors that somehow are overly elite. And of course, I don't know if our buddy Texas T was watching my filthy morning habit this morning, but I was. It's almost all of it this morning. And morning Mika had previously driven Tony around the bend by talking about the Ukrainian invasion of, or the Russian invasion of Ukraine. Well, she had another greatest hit today. And it was so good that they didn't even clip it out of the rerun of the first hour that happens in the third hour. When she referred to, reading the teleprompter, of course, I wish the production team would stop being mean to her. But quoting Putin complaining about goose liver paste, She declared that he had excoriated people for consuming foie gras. Foie gras. Yeah, I know. I'm being picky and bitchy. So what? She gets $1 billion a year to get that right. I'm a hillbilly. I can say foie gras. I can even say it unironically. Because I don't even know where in West Virginia I would go if I wanted some, and I don't. A lot of cruelty involved with foie gras. But it is damn delicious. Never mind, foie gras. But here's the thing that doesn't get mentioned. It wasn't, Pooty didn't just mention foie gras and caviar. It was actually a triad. And I've been watching today, and I've only seen one person make mention of it. I had read it previously. And so it kind of made me a little bit attuned to it. And there were three things Pooty mentioned from which Russia must cleanse itself. Foie gras. Caviar, and gender freedom. Really? Not kidding. But somehow or another, the multimillionaire for-profit media focuses on the foie gras and the caviar. And, okay. Gender freedom. A reason to slaughter women and children. And imprison people in Mother Russia. Gender freedom. And, you know, somewhere in a bunker near Austin, I'm sure that, Texas Governor Greg Putin was saying, yep, that's it. It's the caviar and the foie gras and the gender freedom. That's why we got to charge all these parents as child abusers who try to make sure that their kids don't commit suicide. And I'm sure that those two self-hating women in Missouri and Idaho were like, yes, definitely. And abortions and gender freedom. It would be really helpful if the for-profit media would make mention of this kind of thing. But, it, you know, one person did. But, like I said, I haven't heard any more.
Gender freedom.
Jesus. Oh, thank you to Matt in San Francisco. $200 bitch challenge. Our bitch Imelda is due any day now. She has two puppies awaiting entry into the world. Ferdinand is by her side, excited for his puppies to arrive. So that's $100 for each pup and positive vibes that our bitch Imelda will deliver with no issues. Yes, our Yorkies are named Imelda and Ferdinand. I think that has something to do with my husband's homeland of the Philippines. Speaking of bitches, I know it's a bitch to work sick, so the least we can do is knock down the fundraising. Thank you, Matt. Thank you so much. So if we can scrape up $200, that'll turn into $400, and the fundraising goal will immediately come down to $555, which is tremendously helpful. And I hope Imelda's labor is as easy as any labor can possibly be. And Yorkies, I had a Yorkie for 16 years. His name was Nicholas. And our daughter, our eldest daughter, has one, has a little Yorkie now. Her name is Ellie. But when she was just a pup, I took one look at her tiny, and I sort of nicknamed her Niblet. And she is absolutely adorable. That's just so... Imelda and Ferdinand. My best to the happy parents, Matt. And thank you so much. And it is kind of a bitch to work sick, but I'm trying to get through it. And hopefully we will knock that out and make life considerably better. As far as keeping this little program on the air, you know, it's been a struggle since the day we went on the air, and it'll be a struggle until it ends. But that is so helpful, Matt. Thank you. Have you been? Wait, are you? Do you have any? Are there any naming plans for the pups? Well, we will just await the happy news. Ron and Raleigh noting, the Russian producer that held up the sign showed up in a clip today. She faces a sentence of 10 years in a Russian prison. And when you're talking about a Russian prison, that can often just be a life sentence. 2.5 days in a Russian prison can be a life sentence. But yeah, Ron, you did. Well, you did say that about the Palestinians. We think similarly from time to time, but I wasn't the sharpest knife in the drawer yesterday. I felt like I'd been turned upside down, and my entire cranial vault had been filled with quickcrete. But I have to get better. I have to feel better, because I have an event to attend on Saturday, and it's a big deal. There's a fundraiser benefit for Beckley Pride, which I plan to attend. And then on Sunday, the Meet the Candidate, to wit me, get together at Maggie's Sunday afternoon. And as soon as the program's over, I'm running up to the Wiggling Pig because, oh my God, whole picnic pork shoulders were 98 cents a pound. So I'll get them home, rinse them off, pat them dry, make my brine, put my special blend of herbs and spices in said brine, submerge them in the brine, fill the bucket with the remainder of the bucket with ice, and brine those shoulders, those picnics, until Saturday morning, at which point the char griller acorn will be fired up for the first time in 2022, and I will have I'll do a couple of pork shoulders for folks to do it. You know, do it old school politics. That's the way it used to be done around here. You put on a free feed and press the flesh and shake some hands and kiss some babies and hope that people will vote for you. The goal here, of course, is to raise enough money to buy some yard signs, some roadside signs. And we have an absolutely beautiful design, courtesy of my dear friend, our dear friend, Tara Devlin, she of TerraBuster. And I've been looking into pricing on them. Now, you can get them cheaper, but you cannot get them cheaper and have what's called the union bug on them. And there is no more pro-labor candidate in the state of West Virginia than I am. And so I will not have yard signs that do not have the little union bug down in the corner showing that people who are making a fair wage and have a decent life, thanks to a union, made those signs. So the bottom line is, if I'd like to have 100 signs, and it's a big area that my district is, that's a kind of a bare minimum. If I want 100 signs, I got to come up with somewhere around $1,500, because they are $15 a piece to have them printed in a union shop. And having them printed in a union shop means the world to me. So, that's, hopefully we'll raise some money this Sunday, and people will say, dang, that's some good barbecue. And I'll say, thank you. I've been working on it for a long time. And I'm going to make the hot slaw. I'll make the hot slaw, and I'll make some mild slaw. But the hot slaw is where it's at. And, I just hope, we'll have some fun mingling and carrying on and talking about things that matter. And come out of it with enough to buy some signs, because I've already seen my opponents on the side of the road, and just as I predicted, gold and blue and white, because, those are kind of state colors, and that's why I went with a design that was decidedly not that. I want the signs, if I can ever have them printed, to be, to stand out and catch people's eye. But it's going to be fun. It's going to be fun being outside and fussing with the temperature of the acorn and making sure that the beautiful, smoky, wonderful magic happens. I'll probably put some food porn photos up. Yeah, I know, Brother Deacon Asa. Really, Robin, we spent 20 years calling W a war criminal, and all of a sudden we're a wee bit skittish about calling Vlad the Impaler II a war criminal? I really didn't expect that to come from you. Well, there's a difference. And the difference is, we did, and he is, and so is Richard B. Dick big time before he dicks you, Cheney. And kind of sleazy rice goes great with kind of sleazy chicken. And the whole sorry lot of the homicidal maniacs who started a war of choice and slaughtered more than a million innocent Iraqi civilians who might be alive to this day, many of them, had George not gotten all worked up over, he tried to kill my daddy. Fuck him. We're taking him out. But we did. And Asa, the reason I bring it up is because, that was our internal politics. This is a diplomatic problem. And I just wonder if it's helpful in a matter of diplomacy to be bandying that word about already. Oh, true enough. Steve in New York pays attention to international law. No, there's likely no reason for him to stand in The Hague because the International Criminal Court does not have jurisdiction over non-parties to the Rome Statute. Well, that kind of leaves us with take him out. And apparently Pooty thinks that he can, that they'll be just fine absent the sanctions. Or they'll be just fine even with the sanctions, because he's got some sort of an inside deal with the Xi Jinping in China. Oh, man, Billable Rick, I bet you're not even listening. You were watching basketball, weren't you? Dear me, dear me, dear me. Billable Rick is going to be unconsolable Rick here for a little bit. 12th-seeded Richmond just knocked out Iowa, a 5-seed. It's only happened 18 times since 2010. The Hawkeyes going down to the Spiders. Well, we had that story about the big, terrifying spiders that have invaded the southeastern United States, and there we are. So, sorry, Billable. Damn. And Asa says, yeah, okay, but Vlad the Impaler, too, has gone far beyond considering those types of nuances. Well, he has. I'm just suggesting that maybe we need to, we need to be the cooler head. And, of course, I watched President Zelensky's address. I saw Marginal Trailer Queen and Clanny Oakley sitting on their hands, that at least they didn't stand up and grunt and bark something at him. Again, everything reminds me of something, and it reminded me of them not screaming at Zelensky. Reminded me of the story early in the W reign of error, when there was some sort of Kennedy Center honors. And W was caught on video waving at Stevie Wonder. Good times. Good times. Lee in New York says, stop it, Robin. Putin knows or he views his every action as just. I doubt this changes anything, yet I would not want to be the person showing Putin what Biden said. He's a war criminal. He is war criminal. I will war criminal him. And speaking of young four-legged friends, Ralph says, I'm putting up a $30 challenge for Tiny Kittens, BT, Black Tabby, and her five kittens, who were born last night, three females and two males. The daddy cat has to be a ginger or a ginger and white cat because the three females were calicos or torties. Oh, I love torties. Ours is such a madcap little doll. Thank you, Ralph. So there's $230 in challenges on the table. And if we could knock it out, gosh, $460 off of $955, that's knocking it down by $495. That's wonderful. Thank you, Ralph. And by the way, Matt sent me a picture of the happy couple. Oh, my God, they're adorable. Oh. Ferdinand and Imelda are unbearably cute. Those faces. They just have cuddle me written all over them. I need that little bit of happiness in my world from time to time. Well, Billable Rick was listening after all. Robin, stop telling me how badly Iowa's basketball team played today. I didn't say they played badly. I just said they got beat, and I'm sorry. I'm damn. Can't a girl be sympathetic? I'm just trying to relate. My beloved Mountaineers stunk up the season so badly we didn't even get to go to the dance. Have a little compassion. God, we were bad. But, you know, when you're a Mountaineer, every year is maybe next year. Yeah, well. But I mentioned Marginal Trailer Queen, who apparently has a little bit of a crush on Pootie. Well, she wants everybody to know where she stands, I guess. I wonder if somebody in her staff just writes this stuff. Hey, I wonder if we can get her to say this too.
On our country first, we are seeing rapidly rising inflation.
Hey, hold on a minute. Why we need to focus on our country first? I think that used to go by another name. Is she trying to run away from it? You know, America first, right? They had a conference a couple of weeks ago. She went, or was it her doppelganger, Clanny Oakley? Well, one of them went. I think it was her. And palled around with a known white supremacist and anti-Semite racist in the form of one Nick Fuentes. And she got a rasher of shit and got called out even by, well, a little bit by Kevin McCarthy. But that was the America First conference. Suddenly it's our country first? Oh, Marge, not good. And sorry about the blip in the stream. And Chantel has been crashing at least twice a day of late, and I don't know why. Yeah. You know, you might almost be tempted to think that would be like a campaign issue for me. It is. Shitty internet in Appalachia. Shitty internet in Fayette County. When tourism season kicks in earnest, it will get almost impossible to send so much as a text message. Because everybody's going to be down on the river videoing their trip down the rapids. Yeah, that wasn't just a burp. That was a big belch. That's gross. Thanks, Randy Radar, and thank you, Steve. Irish giraffes. Billable Rick says, do giraffes have to wear green on St. Paddy's Day to avoid getting pinched? I'm just asking for a kangaroo friend. Well, maybe some of us want to be pinched. No, stop that. Potential names for the puppies. Steve says Paul and Laxalt. That was the congressman who was the liaison between Ferdinand and Imelda and Corazon Aquino to get Ferdinand and Imelda to go. Paul and Laxalt. Yeah, I don't know. It just doesn't quite have the ring. We will eagerly await the happy news and the attendant announcement. Yeah, hopefully I'm back. I'm back. Billable Rick said you're offline. But I'm back. The program can continue. I had a clip from Marginal Trailer Clean. I'm not sure exactly when the blip took place, but yeah, I put our country first. Huh. A couple of weeks ago, she would have been saying America first.
Thank you. I rise today to address the House to discuss why we need to focus on our country first. We are seeing rapidly rising inflation. It's completely out of control. Now, while in Congress and here in the Washington bubble that's disconnected with the rest of America, all we're hearing is potential war with Russia over the country of Ukraine. Ukraine is not a NATO member ally, and President Biden had told them that we would be only standing with our NATO member allies. All we're hearing on the news is Ukraine. But yet here in America, what real Americans care about is gas prices they can't afford, inflation that goes up and up to where grocery bills are unaffordable, and they're very concerned about our out-of-control open border. Crime is out of control, but yet Washington is completely disconnected and seems to care more about sending our sons and daughters to a potential war where they do not belong. So I would like to urge my colleagues here in Congress, instead of working on a future COVID bill, spending billions of dollars on COVID that doesn't exist, let's care.
Wait, what?
The COVID that doesn't exist? Honey, there have been coronaviruses for as long as... Oh, why bother? But curiously, there's a little bit of a little bit of coronavirus news, too. Might do well to maybe have a gander at it. But do you feel like you've gone down the rabbit hole and that you're well on your way to the Mad Hatter's Tea Party? There's a Republican who's getting all squishy and anti-war. What? Is she going to show up in tie-dye and love beads next? But, well, the extremes of either end of the political spectrum. Well, I was supposed to do yesterday an interview with our dear friend Thomas over at FYI, and we got started. I felt like homemade garbage, but that was one of those times when Chantel decided to crash, and so we didn't get to finish. But we were talking about something that I had seen a day before. So now, what we have here in the form of marginal trailer queen is the right going so far to the right that they begin to sound like the left. And the same thing happens on the other end of the spectrum, because there really are people out there, and they are absolutely card carrying members of the sparkle fart propelled unicorn cavalry purity patrol, and they're running around grunting the things like, Fauci is a corporatist. Oh, my aching. And so, as Dr. King once said, the moral arc of the universe may be long, but it bends toward justice. Well, the political arc in this country isn't nearly as long, but it bends toward a circular form. It's not some sort of Euclidean line that just extends infinitely in either direction. It loops around to a place, I don't know, out behind the porta potty, where the purity patrol is sitting there swapping spit with the white nationalists and white supremacists and Marjorie Trader gangrene cue balls of the world. That coronavirus that she said doesn't exist, courtesy of Steve, current coronavirus cases in the United States, 81,310,098. Deaths, 995,544. Recovered, 56,699,378. Let's hear that again, sports fans.
Learned about our out-of-control open border. Crime is out of control, but yet Washington is completely disconnected and seems to care more about sending our sons and daughters to a potential war where they do not belong. So I would like to urge my colleagues here in Congress, instead of working on a future COVID bill, spending billions of dollars on COVID that doesn't exist, let's care about our border and let's care about working to have energy independence to lower gas prices for Americans.
Drill, baby, drill.
A COVID that doesn't exist.
could it be that maybe there is some talk in the Congress of crafting future legislation to deal with the next pandemic? Because, well, I hate to break it to this refugee from Planet Fitness, but there will be another pandemic. And based on how we handled this one, the next one is going to be a real booger, as if this one wasn't. And there's reason to believe that it may not be as far off as spirochete-infested brain settlings marginal trailer queen seems to think. Randy Radar says maybe she's talking about the Lambda variant, which you can't seem to research. Lambda is back behind Omicron. It's come and gone. But in an opinion piece published yesterday at The Guardian, Eric Topol writes a pretty lengthy and lengthy and somewhat exhaustive look at where the United States is relative to the next one. He's the founder and director of the Scripps Research Translational Institute, a professor of molecular medicine and executive vice president of Scripps Research. And the title alone was enough to get my attention, because it jives with something that I've been saying here and we have been saying here for a while now. You know, as we all merrily rip our masks off. I got looks today. I had to go in the grocery store briefly. By the way, I've changed shot day from Tuesday to Thursdays, because I got to thinking about it, and I felt so bad Tuesday and felt bad Wednesday. I said, I'll go get my shot on Thursday. Because the hormonal curve is sort of parabolic. And so about 2 days after my shot, I'm at my highest level of estrogen. And that's usually when I feel my best, downright perky. And so I got to thinking, well, okay, that would mean that I would peak somewhere around Saturday and maybe not, you know, have a world-class cry and jag on Sunday anymore. The Sunday weepies have kind of become a thing, and it might be easier just to deal with that because I'm busy like preparing for the program and everything on Tuesdays and Wednesdays and whatnot. So anyway, Thursday shot day, so I had to wander into the grocery store and I put my mask on because I'm pretty religious about my masking, and as I've said before. Just because they say, hey, all you people who pissed and moaned about having to wear a mask, you don't got to piss and moan no more because you don't got to wear a mask. And they have fucking disappeared here. And I feel like I may be the last woman in my county who owns one. I mean, they still make you wear one to go into the doctor's office or the hospital. But oh, they're just swanning right in and out of COVID. Walmart, pretty as you please. And it's still flu season here. And on the off chance that this isn't some sort of seasonal allergy thing, I didn't want anybody. No. And I didn't want to pick up something to, you know, ride shotgun with it, for God's sakes. So I wear my mask. And I got looked at in the grocery store like I had three heads. The damnedest thing. Because people really, really, honestly, and truly believe that COVID is over. And on the way home, I was listening to, what is it, 1A on National Petroleum Radio. And they were talking about the fact that apparently America doesn't give a good goddamn about the immunocompromised. And there were people who were immunocompromised who had to have like 4 and 5 inoculations before they developed any antibodies to the coronavirus. And one of them being interviewed said, it really does feel like nobody gives a damn about us. And I'm sorry, but apparently it's true. But I'm still masking. And I don't care. And one of them raised the issue of, well, we may be headed toward actually banning masks. That seems to be where Rona death sentence in Florida is headed. You know, when he's willing to bully high school students for trying to take care of themselves. Yeah. Ron DeSantis. What a fucking prostate. But the article at The Guardian is worth your time. Eric Topol, who noted, as of yesterday, in the past couple of weeks, the UK, Germany, France, and others are experiencing a new wave. The US should get ready. And he pulls no punches, Eric Topol. When it comes to COVID, the United States specializes in denialism. Deny the human-to-human transmission of the virus when China's first cases were publicized in late 2019. Deny that the virus is airborne. Deny the need for boosters across all adult age groups. There are many more examples, but now one stands out. Learning from other countries. And we don't do that worth beans. And again, as we mentioned, I think, on Tuesday, China's shutting down, slamming down, and locking down. Because the Rona is going round. Oh, but we're gonna laugh our way into the next pandemic that marginal trailer queen doesn't even want to be ready for. And, you know, she doesn't speak alone. She speaks for a lot of other mask holes and COVIDiots and spreadnecks. And Eric Topol in this article sort of lays out the history of the pandemic and how we screwed it up to the tune of, well, it won't be long, will it? We will soon cross 7 digits. We will soon have 1 million dead in the United States. Stand by. Sorry about that. Sometimes, especially now, calls come in that I have to take, and I had to take that one, and it was a good call. So anyway, we have reached the top of the hour and gone past the top of the hour. I'm going to forego the COVID discussion because I knew from yesterday that we were going to get a special call, and I want to go right to that. You know how much I value and how much this community values the information we receive when we get a call from Paul from Parts Unknown. He's been trying to reach the program, didn't know that I wasn't on the air, and I told him I would do my dead level best to be on the air this evening, and he's with us now. Hey, Paul.
Hi, Robin. How you doing?
Been better, but I'll be okay.
I could say the same about myself. Sorry it's been so long. I've been trying to call in and got to listen to some great moments with Scott and Todd, but always mistimed.
I understand. Well, how have you been?
Not great. Just to sum up the last 6 weeks, I got quarantined because I got exposed. I had close contact. I was training with someone that tested positive. And then my allergies kicked in early. They usually kick in mid to late February. They kicked in at the end of January because global climate change is not a thing.
Right.
And that timed up with when symptoms would be showing for my COVID exposure. So they kept me out. So I was out for a couple of days. I took a whole bunch of tests, some of those at-home tests that the government sent, and a couple of other COVID tests. They all tested negative, so they let me back in. And just was crazy busy working overtime. During overtime, I was training new team members, so I didn't have a timed break. I could come out and call during the show. And I couldn't write in because my computer broke. And I don't enjoy typing with my thumbs on my phone.
Oh, for God's sakes, no.
And so then my back went out, which I'm still recovering from, and I was out for 3 days of work last week. And so I'm just trying to get in when I can. And that's how it's been for me. And I know that you've had, you said you had allergies as well this week.
That's all I can guess because, I too have tested negative. I've got events coming up this weekend and I had to know one way. So I tested negative but it's been miserable since like Sunday. I mean, just,
yeah.
And I checked around and a couple of people who know the local flora said, oh yeah, the ragweed's going wild.
Yeah, for me it's the tree pollen.
Well, that could very well be it. That could very well be it too, because things are beginning to green up here.
So I've it's been a while, and I have a lot of important information. So let's just skip over some small stuff.
Let's jump right to it.
Number one. I don't know where you are on fundraising, but I'm going to put out a $150 challenge right now till the end of the show.
Okay.
I'll match $1 for dollar after $250. Let's just do it. I assume you're in a hole. Oh, you've been gone for 3 days.
Yeah, we are. We are. Very much so. Thank you, Paul.
So I'll kick that in. You're welcome. And I'm trying to share the wealth. The overtime has to go somewhere. I spread the wealth what I can because I know everybody's not doing great. Number two, from listening and from calling in and listening on the phone, I've heard you and Todd, and I think Scott, wax poetic about stand-up comedians that you wish were around, like George Carlin and whatnot.
Oh, yeah.
Maybe I missed it, but I'm shocked that Bill Hicks never entered the conversation.
Did he not?
Because in my fantasies...
No, did he not? Because I'm ashamed of myself if I didn't.
Yeah, well, from what I heard, but I didn't hear everything. So just from what I heard, I was like, I was just on the phone with when you and Todd are talking about it, or Scott, a couple of like 3 weeks back on the line listening, going, Bill Hicks, Bill Hicks, Bill Hicks. And it didn't get to that. But my break went over and I had to go. But in my fantasies, if Bill Hicks is alive in a different future, I don't think Donald Trump becomes president. Because I think if there's any Canadian that could have pulled back that Wizard of Oz curtain and seen the idiot working the machine, it could have been Bill Hicks.
I think you're right. And you know, there are so many if then but scenarios. But yeah, his voice is profoundly missed.
Assuming the George W. Bush administration didn't have him silenced during the 9/11 time.
Good truth.
Because I don't think he would have fit Bill for that either.
No, I think you're right.
And so that's the. So just, yeah, just part of my fantasy that the world would have been a better place if Bill Hicks were still alive. But he died in 94 of pancreatic cancer. I think he was only 33 or 34 at the time.
Yeah, he was very young, mid-30s at best.
Yeah. So I'm just going to skip to COVID news because there's a lot going out there. And I know there's a lot going on with Ukraine and Russia and world politics, but I'm just going to skip to the COVID.
Please do.
So here's what I know, just facts. So out here on the West Coast, the mask mandates are gone for California, Oregon, and Washington. They did them all roughly at the same time. In fact, in Washington, I'm originally from there, I had friends and family telling me it's March 28th or 9th is looking to come off. Oh, now it's March 11th. And my opinion was, well, that's just so you can make money on St. Patrick's Day and spring break.
Oh, damn, that's smart.
And keep the economy booked. Because what's two more weeks? When two more weeks could really make the difference in keeping the pandemic down. Just keep water on that fire, even though the fire is out. Otherwise, it restarts up if you've ever fought fires or have firefighters in your family or friends. At work, up until about mid last week, they were telling us the mask mandate on the site is going to stay on, even though the state's lifting them. But they reassessed, and Wednesday of last week, they announced that no, mask mandates would not be staying on. They'd be optional. So it's currently optional. And I'm wearing mine at work. I would say that masking's obviously dropped at work by significantly. The only people that are in general wearing masks at work are either Chinese, and by that I mean from China, or have some sort of virology or immunology or microbiology background in their history and studying, and just understand, have a more intimate understanding of how powerful this stuff is and how wary you have to be of it. But I'm not comfortable. So those are the facts I can give you. I'm not comfortable with the masks off. This is going into my opinion. I still wear mine, as I said before. And I'm not encouraged coming out of China with the they call it stealth Omicron variant. That's the Omicron 2AB or whatever variant. It's more contagious, but not as severe symptoms. So that's spreading through China. We're also seeing that evidence starting to spread through America. And I assume that's what's hitting England right now.
Well, I just saw a statistic, Paul, because knowing you were going to call, I went to this Guardian article by Eric Topol that talks about all the ways that the United States has screwed up. But they're saying that the BA.2 variant is increasing. It's running around.
Yeah, it's getting like.
Yeah, it's running around in China, and they also note. He also notes that. While wastewater monitoring is sketchy at best in the United States, 15% of the 410 sites where wastewater monitoring is conducted between 24 February and 10 March, there was a greater than 1,000% increase compared to the prior 15-day period for the BA.2 variant. That sounds like another wave, doesn't it?
Yeah, it's just like Omicron was getting its legs underneath it. It's this stuff a lot like watching a race, and you don't have to wait for the runner in the back of the pack to get to the front of the pack to tell that they're going to overtake it once they start speeding up, and you can see them gain, you know, three or four stride lengths every lap on the track. So, yeah, it's getting its legs underneath it. It's moving. It's moving through China. It's moving even despite their lockdown procedures still, because it's just, there's a level of contagiousness that you can get to that, you know, you just can't be protected. There isn't much you can do other than stay away from people at a certain point. You can wear a wetsuit, but at a certain point, when someone hits you with a fire hose level of water, you're going to get wet. So, it's not as severe. But my frustration, and I know the horn community understands this because I've been hammering it and hammering it and hammering it. But with some of my friends and family and my wife, they're just a little exhausted or just giving up on it. Like, oh, well, there's nothing to do. We can't force everyone to wear masks forever. And I understand that. But the mutation lottery is still playing. Like, it doesn't matter that Omicron is less, causes less symptoms. It can still mutate, and you're still giving lottery tickets. Every living creature, and we're seeing Omicron in deer, in animals. So it's not just people playing. Every living creature that catches this is a lottery ticket in the mutation game. And I don't know how many times we have to go through this cycle of stop taking it off when you think you're safe. Hold it for just a little longer. I really do believe that if you could just get more people and hold on for another month and not take this stuff off and party like crazy, you can really stop this on a global scale. But we just keep coming up to the edge and then backing away, and it regrows. It's sort of like, not making sure the bad guy in the horror movie is dead. And when you shoot him and he falls on the ground, oh, and he's gone. And then you have that, like, you know, jump scare at the end where, oh, nope, he's still alive and he just killed Bob.
Yeah, yeah.
You were robbing in my head. That was just a general Bob I don't know.
Yeah, that's Bob's your uncle. Because Bob's gone.
Yeah.
Looking at the facts and figures in this article, it runs hand in glove with what you're saying, because relative to vaccinations, the United States of America, Paul, is 65th in the world for people having two shots, 70th in the world for people having three. Now, the booster came out, and it was all, go get your booster. I went and got my booster. Only 29% of the American population has all three shots, Paul.
Yeah, I mean, they're relying on computer models.
Yeah, that's a party invitation to the coronavirus, where there will be pinatas full of mutational lottery tickets.
Yeah, and I had a coworker of mine tell me a great analogy for how vaccines work. And I can't believe that it's not, like, I can't believe that people in, like, the White House or the CDC don't talk about this in this analogy. And he said, vaccinations, you know, if a pandemic is a lot like a house being on fire, and all of these agencies are like a bucket brigade, and the bucket is the populace and how vaccinated it is, and the percentage of the people vaccinated is the percentage of the people not vaccinated is the percentage of holes you have in your bucket. And it's hard to put out a fire with a colander bucket brigade, which is what we've been doing.
Truth. Absolutely.
And everyone's working hard, and everyone's working longer than they had to put out this fire, and it never seems to get enough water because we're using a colander. With, as you stated, not even a colander at this point. It used to be a colander when we had two shots at like 50%. Now I don't know what we have, just a chewed up, plastic cup from a dog that a dog's got hold of and chewed to pieces. And it barely holds any water at all. And we quickly just trying to run from the water source to the fire, passing this cup around, trying not to spill any water, and it's not putting out the fire. And that's where we are. And it won't never stop until you have a bucket, not a colander. Like, you can't, there's, no matter how much you yell at the colander, no matter how, what you do, no matter, even if you pour more water in the colander, this problem never goes away until you have a bucket, not a colander. Like, that's it. That's all. That is a simple solution. Get a bucket. But we just won't get on board. If we got 95%, I mean, you don't have to have everybody. If a bucket's got a couple of leaks in it, you can still get a significant amount of water on that fire in a bucket brigade, but not if it's super leaky.
It's not an optimistic picture you're painting, Paul.
Well, I don't know how many times we got to run through it. I had this kind of like fun little epiphany that would be kind of funny. If like, you know, Saturday Night Live did a sketch show, they could probably make it funnier than I did. But if they combined that old 80s game, Press Your Luck, might ring a bell. Come on, no whammies, no whammies, no whammies, no whammies, stop. And then you've got those little cartoon devils that take your money and your prizes. Whammy. And I thought about that kind of a game, except it's like, no, it's like presidential, like you get Donald Trump up first, you know, have whomever plays Donald Trump on SNL, basically going, okay, no whammies, no whammies, you know, no mutations, no mutations, no mutations, stop. Oh, you lose everything. And that's just as a reminder that the strategy they're chasing, because they're trying to be reelected and they're trying to not ruin the economy and they're trying to make this as painless as possible. But they're playing Press Your Luck every time. Every time they take the mask mandates off, they're hoping that there won't be any mutations, but there's a lot of mutations on the board. So
absolutely. I mean, we've been over this ground before, but for the life of me, Paul, I don't understand the anti-vaxxers and the mask holes and the COVIDiots and the spreadnecks. It's like they want to see people die.
I don't understand it either. Part of it is propaganda. A line from a video game, actually, that one of my favorite video games from the early 2000s, a line that's very cinematic with a lot of plot and story and talking. There's a line in there I like where one character says to another, after they've destroyed his people, his home, burned his lands, just destroyed his life, and he's now just sort of a banished king, a hermit, like living in a tower, and you go and visit him, and you basically ask him, you know, you must hate them for what they did to you. And his response was, I don't hate them. They are simply unenlightened and therefore vulnerable to manipulation. And I think that describes what's going on here. I don't hate the Trumpers. I hate the people that are manipulating them.
Well, I think that's well placed. But I would like to know better who exactly those people are.
I'm pretty sure that you could come up with a list of 5 to 10 off the top of your head, most of which have or currently work at Fox News.
Yeah, but the real money is the billionaire class, and those are the ones who are funding it, and the funding is everything.
I agree, and we're not in the position to tackle that problem currently.
No, we are not.
In fact, I read an article today or early yesterday talking, basically an opinion piece talking about how the era of Trump is over, basing it on a private air flight that Mike Pence took with Sheldon Adelson's wife. Sheldon Adelson passed away early in 2021. And now his wife, I forget her name, she's the kingmaker. And she's not donating anything to Donald Trump. She's looking for someone else. And so Mike Pence, and she's not donating anything as far, at least the article is saying, at this time she's not making any major donation to Donald Trump-esque politicians like Ron DeSantis. Sorry, there's a lot of heavy traffic coming through.
No, that's okay. Not a lot of noise, so you're good.
Yeah, I think. I mean, there are a lot of people jockeying for position, Paul. And Ron DeSantis has decided that he can out-asshole Donald Trump. And apparently there's a market for that with people like Mrs. Adelson.
Yeah. And I also don't like that for part of the deal to keep the government working, they cut the $13.8 billion, and I could be off a little bit, of extra funding to fight COVID and to do COVID resistance measures in the United States. So those things are no longer being funded because we don't need them at the moment. And it feels like, tactically, you're just trying to set the country up for failure. You as the minority party are purposely being obstructionist to hinder or hobble the plan to solve the problem enough that it's still a problem where it's outbreaking again. And we got to put the masks on while you got to vote in November and October and setting them up for failure just so that they can criticize them and then take the win, which is disingenuous, immoral, and is costing people lives.
Right.
And I share your frustration. There's no.
And is par for the course for the Republicans.
Right. And I share your frustration that there's no accountability for it. Like, no one even just says it. I mean, it took them, I don't know. Apparently, you can do whatever you want to brown people in Syria, but once you start doing the white people in Europe, then you're a war criminal.
Right. It's kind of hard to miss.
And I assume that you get the war criminal status from doing horrible things, you know, in the 1990s and 2000s that involved poisoning your political appointments, silencing reporters, killing reporters, threatening, all this other stuff. I mean, that's a war crime agenda right there.
Last I checked, and, you know, irony of ironies, the Russians killed a Fox journalist.
Oh, I heard they were simply wounded.
Oh, it's my understanding. One was killed, and their local producer or some such was killed as well. Maybe I'm wrong. I hope I am.
Oh no. Yeah, it's unfortunate, and to talk on recruiting briefly because I could go on for quite a while on my own sort of opinions. I'm not a radical, but I have a zero tolerance policy, like grab you by the throat, cut the bullshit, you're going to stop doing this for a few things. One of them is like harming children, and the other one is you know, slaughtering innocent people. Like there's no conversation that you need to have about that. That's okay, we're done. Like, I understand that we're threatening World War III and there are other factors, but cities like Mariupol, it's awful. That theater that was bombed, hit yesterday, I saw a news board saying that they have still not sent search and rescue or first responders to that theater where there could be children and innocent people that were hiding there and finding refuge. There could be trapped under the rubble. They haven't sent them because Russia has a history of tapping a place, waiting for first responders to come in, and then tapping it again. They did it in Syria, and they're doing it in Ukraine. And they don't want to send the first responders in. So you've just got people trapped in rubble with no...
Well, they were announcing
with
this,
no help coming.
They were announcing this morning, Paul, that in fact they are retrieving people from the rubble and that the people hiding in the basement were largely unharmed. But, of course, truth is the first casualty of war.
And then and I've also heard commenters talking about, including in Mariupol and a couple of other cities, that supplies to the people are not getting in there. So now, on top of everything, food's becoming scarcer. I think a child was reported dying of dehydration a couple days ago in Mariupol simply because there's just not resources available and not getting to them. And I don't know. I know that in America, hunger is not a common thing. I do know that there's a lot of food insecurity, but most people have not experienced, that maybe listen to the show, have not experienced hunger firsthand. I know Cassie has, if she's still listening. And you're waiting for Putin to break or for the government to reorganize without him while you put sanctions on, but you're putting people in Ukraine. They're going to starve and die of thirst. And that's the reason that Zelensky's begging for a no-fly zone. I know it's a political no-no, but even if you could just say, hey, for the next 5 hours, it's a no-fly zone, just so you could get humanitarian aid and supplies to people, to innocent people that need it, just for those few hours. And then you can go back to shelling and being a jerk. But they can't even get that. And I know that they're trying, but every time there's a ceasefire or talk of a ceasefire, they're still shooting at you while they're talking about it. Sorry, just my personal frustration.
No, you're not wrong. There is, and you know, paranoia has to come, and some of that's also known as strategy. But paranoia comes with it, too, insofar as I've read it in multiple places that this whole business of negotiating a settlement is just a charade to give Putin logistical time to bring his, you know, bring 700,000 more troops online.
Yeah. And then lastly, and I'm sure I know you've talked about this at length on your on the program, which is that is it Budapest or Helsinki? I forget. Whatever accord that Ukraine gave up its weapons in exchange for protection in the 90s.
Right.
Good luck with nuclear proliferation. I think in the next several weeks, I don't think it matters how this shakes out, because it's going to shake out horribly for Ukraine, and you're going to be hard pressed to stop countries that have nuclear weapons or countries that are looking to get nuclear weapons from stopping or giving them up, because they're just going to point to Ukraine and go, and Ukraine?
Exactly. I mean, this is all a profoundly, profoundly effective argument in favor of why Pakistan has them, why India has them, why North Korea has them, and why other countries damn well want them. Hey, going back to the masks for just a minute, Paul, Darlene asked if you could please repeat the names of the best vendors for getting N95s and KN95s. Do you have that to hand?
I don't have that on hand. The only vendor I know and use is the www.bonafidemasks.com, and it's a company out of the East Coast. And they're PPE products made in the USA, and they're not sent through Amazon, so you know who the supplier is, so you know you're not getting a counterfeit, I think, or whatever.
Bonafidemasks.com.
I can't think of another word. It's kind of, yeah.
Okay.
All one word. All lowercase. Yeah. I don't. Is it counterfeit masks? I know there's been some. They say they're KN95s, but they're not really KN95s, ordering through Amazon, depending on the supplier.
Right.
Is counterfeit the right word for that?
Yeah, that would be, yeah. Or inauthentic.
Yeah. Inauthentic, yeah. So these would be authentic masks. And I would recommend the KN95s. And they have the second one, I forget the name of that one, and then they have the ALTA level 3s, which are the surgical masks that you see doctors wear, and the common ones you see people worn during the pandemic that are the papery ones, the blue on the outside, the white on the inside.
Right.
I constantly say blue on the outside and white on the inside because I've seen so many people wear them inside out.
Yeah.
And it does make a difference.
Oh, it does, yes.
I'd recommend that, and I'd recommend, and if you don't, Bonafide masks, there's a wait because they're popular, but if you find other sites, just make sure the products are made in the United States. It's the best way to make sure they're real masks that are not, they're authentic masks, they're not counterfeit.
Excellent. Well, hopefully that'll meet Darlene's needs. Bonafidemasks.com.
Yeah. Back to the pandemic real quick before my break runs out. And I'll try to call in again next week and just keep giving updates. We could just go through this. It could just be 2021 all over again. Everything looks fine. March, April, May, we start taking off the masks. And then, you know, starting August, September, it's coming back. and everyone's pent up and everyone wants to travel, and I'm not seeing a happy ending here. I'm not seeing the pandemic ending.
No, I don't either. And it seems like we're setting ourselves up for an even bigger fall. Darlene has a follow-up question real quick. I purchased KN95s through Bonafide Masks, but I can still smell certain things through them. Is that normal, or is it indicative that some air particles can still get through? Just curious. I know it's better to wear them than not, but is being able to smell through them still okay?
Yes, you will still be able to smell through them. That is okay. I double mask and I still smell through things, which is a little frustrating. And just understand that the masks, they're you can smell things through them because they're plague resistant, kind of taking off of water resistant. There's a limit that they won't work because the holes in the mask are bigger than the virus. And so they kind of put layers on the KN95 to make the holes smaller with adjusted holes. Does that make sense?
Yes.
That description?
Yes.
But stuff can still get through. And I don't want to freak anyone out. Just hear me out and don't panic. More, probably 75% chance, give or take 10%, unless you've been living Howard Hughes-like in a hole where no one sees you, you probably have been exposed and have had coronavirus particles enter your system. It just takes a certain amount all at once to overwhelm your initial defenses.
Right. You haven't reached that threshold.
It's not about necessarily keeping... Yeah, it's not about keeping all the virus... The mask doesn't keep all the virus out. The mask reduces the number of virus particles that make it through when someone breathes on you by, like... They get rid of like 98% of them, which is why I can't be indoors with a, well, I can now, but I couldn't be indoors even with a mask, even with everyone else masked, for more than 15 minutes because it's just a time thing. Because every breath you take, you're breathing in maybe, if there's virus in the air, someone has it breathing on you, maybe breathing in 5 to 10 particles of breath, which is a lot better than 500 particles of breath. Or 250 particles of breath. And again, I'm making these numbers up. Once you reach 10 or 20,000 particles ingested an hour, you've now probably been infected. So to get to 100%, you need to hide like Howard Hughes or put on the full respirator with an auxiliary air or wear one of those bubble suits that have their own air like in the plague movies where they've got the full on suit
right.
And the helmet.
Yeah. Okay. Well, go ahead.
And remember that it takes roughly around, I don't know the exact numbers, but I think it's roughly 1,500 to 2,000 virus particles of COVID to effectively infect one cell. So the one thing we have going for us is that it's cold virus and it's not super efficient at infecting a cell.
Well, that's at least that provides a little bit of help. But like I said right before you came on, we are less than 5,000 deaths away from crossing a million.
We are losing 2,000. Sorry, go ahead.
No, I said that's a hell of a thing. That's a hell of a thing to note when one realizes that it didn't have to be that way.
No, it didn't. So I got to go. So thanks for letting me talk, not really have a conversation, just sort of blurt out and vent.
Oh, no, thank you. You are often at your very best when you're blurting and venting. That's when we get the best information.
I need you to pass it on to my wife.
Yeah.
Real quick, don't forget about the $150 challenge. Support Robin and Head On Radio. I can't tell the Horn community what to do about masking and taking precautions. I can just tell you what I'm doing and what my family's doing. My stepdaughter still went to school masked this week. Next week she's on spring break. Oddly enough, it was her choice. She chose to keep it on. And she was ridiculed for it at school, but I'm proud of her. She kept it on and stuck to her decision and didn't let other people influence her decision. So we're still masking up and still being careful, for the next couple of weeks and seeing if the numbers are gonna go back up. We're just holding on, and it looks like we're starting to see a little spike, but who knows? So sometime around the first week of April, if the numbers are still staying flat, then we'll probably take the masks off and not wear them everywhere. I will let you know, the Horn community, what we do and how the numbers are. I'll report back by the end of the month whether we're going unmasked.
Okay.
Make your own decisions. Your numbers are pretty low. You're probably okay, but the next variant spiking back up, and it's called stealth Omicron for a reason, and a lot of people could have it before the news tells you to put the mask back on. So be prepared and better safe than sorry is my advice. Other than that, let's just let's just keep our heads up, find something to make you laugh. I've been listening to a lot of stand-up comedy, and try to keep your spirits up and go keep going forward.
That's all we can do, isn't it, Paul?
Yes, and if you want some nostalgic laughs from a gentler and less stressful time, there's always Bill Hicks.
Yes, there most assuredly is. All right. Well, Paul, you take care of yourself. Stay safe, my friend. And I assume the 15 to 20 feet still applies?
Yes, and I forgot to tell the Horn community one thing from my life. We had that five or six family play date enclosed pod that we've been working on in 2021. And these are people that know what they're doing and have not caught it yet. And between the 1st of January and the end of last month, every one in that pod, their families got it, except for my family and one other family. Well, so even people that are being cared, and nothing bad happened. They're vaccinated, no severe symptoms, no one went to the hospital. But the fact that it's more contagious is getting through people that are taking precautions.
Well, Jude wrote in and said, may Paul and his family be well, along with me and with Annette and the Horn community. And she jumped in on your challenge with $25 for women standing. Thank you, Jude. And thank you for the challenge, Paul.
Thank you, Jude.
Please stay well.
You're welcome. And please, and you too, and you get better and feel better, and I'll look and try to call next week. I'll stay in touch with email.
Okay, thanks a bunch, Paul. Take care. It is always a pleasure hearing from you.
Happy
St. Patrick's Day.
You take care too, and happy St. Patrick's Day. Bye.
Bye now. The one and only Paul from Parts Unknown. I'm so glad he called in. I knew he was going to try, and I'm just extremely pleased that he was able to. You know, we talk about coming up on a million deaths, and it runs a weird parallel with a phenomenon that public health officials have noted over the last several years, and in fact the last several decades. It was in the 1990s that the Journal of the American Medical Association noted, or a study in the Journal of the American Medical Association notes that in the 1990s, life expectancy began to decline in the United States. And they began to decline in specific areas. It will come as no surprise to realize that the areas where the decline came were places where Republicans were in power. Writing for the Washington Post, Jennifer Rubin says it should come as no surprise that the highest rates for COVID-19 deaths and murders are found mainly in red states. A political mindset that prioritizes racial resentment, anti-science zealotry, and manufactured cultural wedge issues is not likely to be conducive to long, healthy lives. Indeed, antagonism toward elites, that means people who actually know what the fuck they're talking about, often impedes common sense measures that save lives. And so, it turns out that once you adjust for age, 8 out of the 10 highest COVID-19 death rates, well, those states all have Republican governors. 9 out of the 10 states with the worst vaccination rates have Republican governors. Murder rates are 40% higher in states that Nitwit Nero won in the last two cycles. 8 of the 10 states with the highest murder rates in 2020 also voted for Donald Trump and other Republicans in the last 20 years. Which is curious when you compare that with the clip that we had from Marginal Trailer Queen talking about the crime is out of control. Well, the places where crime is out of control, if we can actually use that phrase, are largely the states that claim to be hardest on crime, but are actually more geared toward making sure that the people who are in political disfavor wind up doing the time. Jennifer Rubin seems to have been in a bit of a dudgeon at the Washington Post. She said, whatever the specific reason, it's clear the governing philosophy of right-wing states, low spending, prioritization of cultural wedge issues, anti-elitism, leads to deadly results. Maybe it's time they stop spending their political energy persecuting gay kids, banning books, outlawing abortion, and fanning culture wars. They have plenty of systemic problems they failed to address while busying themselves with MAGA crusades. And it's curious that she mentioned banning books because, well, here we are again. Let's go to Arizona, Stan. Hi, Suman. Arizona schools are looking at getting rid of some books. Now, I hate to say I agree. Well, I don't. But nobody needs to read Atlas Shrugged. But I guess some good God-fearing, upstanding, Bible-believing, Christ-centered, evangelical, fundamentalist, amosexual, Christian Republicans out in Arizona have decided that nobody needs to read Atlas Shrugged, probably because of the dirty parts. Some of the worst sex scenes ever written in the history of what passes for literature. Dear God, but that also, the list of shit to be included, not shit, the list of books to be included also includes The Color Purple, and yes, that pornographic masturbation fest, The Canterbury Tales by Geoffrey Chaucer. No, really. There's legislation proposed in Arizona that would ban the teaching or direction of students to study any material that is sexually explicit, and that is defined as masturbation, sexual intercourse, or physical contact with a person's clothed or unclothed genitals, pubic area, buttocks, or if such person is female, breast. Having contact with the male breast is apparently okay.
Yeah.
Then there's Representative Michelle Udall, a Republican from Mesa, who offered an amendment that would say, well, not if it's classical literature or early American literature or literature needed for college credit, but only if the parents say yes. Oh, God. This whole nightmare is sponsored by some dude bro by the name of Jake Hoffman from, no, really, Queen Creek. And he said,
Well, this ain't a sex ed, Bill. It's about keeping sexually explicit material out of the hands of the cheerins. Because I just know that some 30... Sure. Atlas Shrugged is what all the third graders are reading now. Oh, my God. And so this Jake Hoffman from Queen Creek brought some images for the hearing. He said he had to get clearance from the Arizona Department of Public Safety and legislative lawyers before the state could even print them. One of them was a cartoon of a man and woman getting it on, and another was a cartoon of a boy rubbing one out. And they all derive from a book from 1994 called It's Perfectly Normal that is basically a puberty guide for sexual health for kids 10 and older. Sexual health, how to have a decent relationship, and talk about puberty and pregnancy and sexual orientation. With full-color illustrations of naked people. Mm-hmm. Naked. And we know what naked means. So Jennifer Rubin was apparently right. And look, legislative time is finite in nature. It amazes me that somehow or another, through dedication and hard work and advocacy, my little state managed to get all the way through its legislative session with not a single anti-LGBTQ bill being passed. I know. Miracle, right? But legislative time is a finite thing, and every minute that any legislative body spends worrying about the dirty pictures or the sexy time talk and making it in the kitchen with Mary, you know, that the Republicans really did once upon a time try to ban a book called Making It in the Kitchen with Mary. It was a cookbook. Every second that they spend on that is second that is time that they're not spending on, I don't know, children's actual well-being. Or making sure that maybe 13-year-old kids don't get behind the wheel of a vehicle and drive it head-on into a, let's see, what was the story here? Drive it head-on into a van and killing 9 people, including 6 college golfers and their golf coach. That really happened this past Tuesday. Thirteen-year-old kid got in the truck, driving in Texas, and slaughtered 9 people. Well, if you're wasting time voting on book banning, you're not dealing with the 13-year-old behind the wheel problem, which apparently is a thing, at least in Texas. Lord. Oh, and thank you. Thank you so much to Libby. Between her and Jude, we are now at $45 raised between the challenges put forward by Paul from Parts Unknown and by Matt and by Ralphs. That's a lot of challenge money on the table this evening. And I guess, well, thank you to Jude and thank you to Libby for jumping in on it. Because, let's see, that's a total of $380. And that would, if those challenges were met, that would get us, that would wipe out more than 2 days worth of the fundraising hole that now stands at $955. And then there's the 10 from Joey and Giraffe. So that's $390. And we are $45 into those challenges. So thank you to Jude, and thank you very kindly. Thank you, Libby. And I had a note from Steve from Georgistan, the hard sell. Been listening in the tub with a towel wrapped around my head to keep from exploding.
I understand. A nice soak in the tub is so relaxing. Steve says, it's my observation that the U.S. media is doing a hard sell on this war. War porn is an overstatement. We get it. They need to slow their roll. They won't, because there are serious coins to be made in war. I can remember when Wally the K covered the Vietnam conflict. He allocated about 10 minutes of the war, and the rest of the coverage was focused on other pertinent issues. I'm sure the Horn family is aware that parts of China are on mandatory COVID lockdown. Sorry, Marge. Today on our liberal MSNBC, Andrea Mitchell gave the China lockdown about a minute, then back to wall-to-wall war coverage. Of course, there's time for countless commercials during the war coverage, at least four times an hour. Smedley Butler was correct. War is a racket. This one is no exception. What's that? War is too important to be trusted to the advertising department. And yet, it is. I'm such a total hopeless history nerd. I can't help that I watch all of this going down with Ukraine, and I think of how the Spartans and the Athenians used Syracuse, on Sicily as a proxy for their conflict. And I'm in a terribly conflicted space with all of this. I don't know what to think. I'm scared to death that I'm being manipulated. And like I've said before, that phrase manufacturing consent just keeps rolling through my mind. But then I read an article like the one from Chris Hedges. And while I can sit there and nod my head and say, yeah, we sure did fuck up in Iraq and we fucked up Afghanistan. I mean, Chris Hedges did such a deep dive in that article that he was given Jimmy Carter shit for hiring Mika's daddy. You know, Zvig. And called him, you know, an old cold warrior, blah, blah, blah. And yeah, I guess. But God damn it doesn't seem like asking nicely is doing very much toward getting Vlad Putin to stop flattening fucking theaters and maternity hospitals. What do we do when we get to that point? I mean, I think some of the little gizmos we're sending are cool as shit, but we're only sending, you know, what, 100 of those little drones? They carry maybe a 5-pound payload? And supposedly it's enough to take out a tank? Or maybe a mobile rocket launcher? Jesus, it blew my mind. The Javelin system that everybody's making such noise about would be such a game changer for the Ukrainians? You know who manufactures that? Russia! Damn it! So I suppose they've got all they want of them and, you know, put some things up into the air and see if they can knock those down. Those Javelin systems are effective up to like 90,000 feet altitude. It's astonishing. Do you feel any sense of conflict about this? I really do. I want to know. Because I've spent the better part of my adult life and a lot of my childhood despising the idea of war. I always think of the sign outside Burpleson Air Force Base in Dr. Strangelove, peace is our profession. Sure. But you know, there's a sort of sense of a thrill in the air at the Pentagon. Ooh, we're going to get to do it some more. Do we get to do it? I want to do it. Let's do it. Let's fall in war. But then the question becomes, how do you do it without doing it? This is all beginning to sound very sexual, isn't it? And there are people doing the hard business of not war. If somebody doesn't give Chef Jose Andres a Nobel Peace Prize pretty soon, I'm going to be severely disappointed in the committee. And they don't want that. That man is has an amazing commitment to people. And they have fed thousands and thousands and thousands and thousands. They've served out meals all over Ukraine, you know, with the missiles overhead. And they keep on cooking. The Russians, meanwhile, are traveling with and I don't know, maybe it's just because I don't know that much about the military. Do we have these? Do we travel with these? Did we send these to Iraq and Afghanistan? Because the Russian columns have mobile crematoria among them. So that there won't be any bodies to send home to grieving Russian mothers in cheap cardboard boxes with Russian flags draped over them. It's reported now that Russian soldiers have their cell phones confiscated so that Ukrainians who capture them can't make them call their mothers and tell them where they are. Mom, Ukrainians are making me call to tell you that I'm in Mariupol. Yeah, we're besieging the city. People are starving and dying. Yeah, I'm sorry, Mom. They didn't tell me. They just sent me. Mobile crematoria? Yeah, you know, your son probably went AWOL seeking gender freedom in Ukraine. He's probably woman named Paulina now because he was corrupted by Western decadent gender freedom. Tell me I'm wrong. Convince me I'm wrong. Greg says, I thought maybe you were going to say that the Javelin was made by Raytheon. Yay. No, that's Mother Russia. And I don't know if it, you know, is there any benefit to American forces fighting this fight? German forces, French, British, Italian, NATO forces? Sorry, I had to have a word with the boy. But apart from sending NATO in, what's the answer? I mean, we pay good money to people to answer these questions. People who all too often have hammers and see every problem as a nail. And the hammers go boom. Can we not teach some pimply-faced Ukrainian kids sitting in trailers to fly drones like we do here? Give them some of those. I mean, we don't have to paint Chinese stars on them like Nitwit Nero wants or anything. And Jude wants y'all to know that there is a new Proud Boys assault coming. for the first time since they stormed the Capitol on January 6th and December 21st in Salem, Oregon, there's a community warning out for March 19th. The Capitol City Proud Boys are organizing their rally. Jude says, in the midst of horror and death engulfing our planet, standing quietly in the presence of the Proud Boys is the least we can do. If any of the community would align for that time, it would be deeply appreciated. She's taking the boots and flowers to this conflict zone. And Jude, all I can say is, for God's sake, stay safe. Because they are not good faith people. And they would hurt you as readily as hurt anyone else. Because that is what they live for. So we have, we've been round and about on more issues than just war porn. Because there's more going on than just that. But it all does, at least to me, seem somewhat interconnected. And what I mean by that, again, I'm having a hard time finding the difference between Greg Aspott in Texas or Governor Meemaw in Alabama and Vladimir Putin and his complaints about gender freedom. WNBA star Brittany Griner is somewhere in some Russian hellhole. During the WNBA offseason, Brittany Griner was a player in Mother Russia. Apparently the pay is good. But her luggage was searched at an airport, and they claim to have found cartridges of hash oil for vaporizing and using of drug. She is being denied contact with the American consulate, and she has now had her hearing put off until May. So God alone knows what her status is. And meanwhile, we have a Liz Cheney sighting. Again, I'm conflicted over Liz. We get all misty-eyed and worked up when a Republican does the bare minimum of anything that anyone who actually gives a good goddamn about the oath that they took to the Constitution would do. She voted with Nitwit Nero over 95% of the time. But she voted to impeach him. And now she sits on the January 6th committee, and she says that January 6th was a terrible thing that should never happen in the United States ever again, which every daggum Democrat says. But somehow it's extraordinary that Liz Cheney does. Again, she gets big-time points when she does a de minimis thing, like pointing out that Marginal Trailer Queen is, in her words, a useful idiot. Marginal Trailer Queen yesterday went on Facebook video and said that the only reason we're interested in this is because American leaders have direct financial interests there. And went on to say that what Ukraine is doing is pretty much same with what Russia is doing, and making the both sides argument in that invasion. Well, Liz at least said, Putin is targeting and slaughtering civilians in a brutal, unprovoked war against Ukraine, a sovereign democratic nation. Only the Kremlin and their useful idiots would call that a conflict in which peace agreements have been violated by both sides, using the language that Marjorie Trader Gangrene Q-Ball had previously grunted. And she's not wrong. I'm just trying to figure out what it is that makes her so godforsaken. Well, I guess because she's like a little unicorn Republican, actually willing to honor her oath to the Constitution, while all the Democrats do, but it's a big deal when Republicans do. And it's par for the course because of course, she has her proboscis so far up the fundament of Donald Trump that when Dingus Khan yawns, you can see Margie's smiling face. And Dingus Khan said that Pootie is
a genius.
And so since Marge did get shit for participating in the America First thing, yeah, that is why she said our country first. That phraseology in that clip that we had earlier in the program. So, well, hooray for you, Liz. I'm so glad that you can actually do the right thing. Daddy's little deferment. Yeah, how about some, and by the way, if you want to get involved with the conversation, you're more than welcome to. I don't know. Maybe the 13-year-old in Texas, Brother Deacon Asa says, maybe the 13-year-old in Texas was suffering from affluenza. Maybe. Or maybe, you know, I mean, we just let 13-year-olds, I mean, they learn to drive pretty early around here. You know, you can get them a little booster seat and let them sit up there and scrunch up close to the steering wheel. Kid apparently had a blowout, lost control, and went head on into that van. God. In January 6th news, Joshua Macias is a right-wing, mouth-breathing, knuckle-walking maggot. And he grunts the usual grunts. He says things like the 2020 election was stolen. And he got arrested because he went to the Philadelphia Convention Center. I've been there. On November 5th, 2020, he was arrested there while carrying a .40 caliber handgun. He was there with a fellow member of Vets for Trump named Anthony LaMotta. He was carrying a 9mm handgun strapped to his hip. And the cops then searched the vehicle. It was a Hummer H2, they'd driven in from Virginia. They found an AR-15 and some ammunition. They had a valid permit for it in Virginia, which is not in which Philadelphia is not. And so they were arrested on charges that they were trying to interfere with the vote canvass that the Philadelphia Board of Elections was doing. And then they let Macias out on bail. A month later, though, he was talking at the January 6th rally, you know, the beginning of the insurrection in D.C. while he was already on bail. Well, it took the Daily Beast to dig all of this up and sort it out. And now, thanks to the Daily Beast reporting, the Philly DA's office is trying to revoke his bail, Macias's. You know, because he did not, and this is always a condition of bail, remain law-abiding. And he posted video of himself attending the insurrection party. Human Rights First found it, and I guess the Daily Beast picked it up afterward. A guy named Christopher Goldsmith noticed the video. And the DA's office wrote, "Today's filing shows the role that everyday Americans can play in working with systems of justice to hold people accountable for trying to destroy the American Constitution and everything that it stands for." Now, that was Christopher Goldsmith. "Anti-fascism occurs every day in this country, and my team at Sparvarius and the Innovation Lab at Human Rights First are just a small part of the active resistance against those who seek to tear down our institutions and replace them with an autocrat." Good for you, Mr. Goldsmith. Good for you. Hopefully the DA's office will be successful. Oh, what else? Oh, there it is. Speaking of people doing their part, apparently a loose ad hoc group of, well, they call themselves information warriors. Other articles have called them hackers, programmers mainly. They're working to overcome internet censorship in really creative ways. Among other things, they're making "Putin is a killer" or "Putin kills children" show up in Cyrillic in otherwise mundane places. They're hacking the personal information of people like oligarchs and Russian military personnel, who, by the way, are not doing real great. Three or four senior Russian generals have been killed in Putin's war. Ukraine claiming to have killed four of them. And speaking to Business Insider, people allegedly in the know said that, well, they're going to the front to try to salvage the war effort because it's flagging and failing so badly. And they're trying to rally their troops at the front. I wonder if they'll. I wonder if they'll stuff them in the mobile crematoria. The latest kill Tuesday was Major General Oleg Mityaev. He was part of the merciless siege of Mariupol. And the Ukrainians were, the Ukrainian government put out a photo of what they said was the corpse of General Mityaev. Supposedly, there are 20 major generals in Ukraine to lead the invasion, the assault, the war of choice. So, bumping off four of those, hell, that's 20% of the generals they sent. Major General Vitaly Gerasimov, first deputy commander of Russia's 41st Army, killed in Kharkiv. Russian Major General Andrei Kolesnikov, not Kalashnikov, thought to be the commander of the 29th Combined Arms Army, killed March 11th. And Major General Andrei Sukhovetsky, in addition to the guy I mentioned a little at the beginning, the deputy commander, another deputy commander of the Russia's 41st Army, killed in February. President Zelensky talking about how many Russian conscripts died, dozens of officers. One more general is among the killed invaders. At least one general today. And of course, oddly enough, they're not doing terribly at the messaging conflict. There is nothing but death here for you, and the business with the sunflower seeds. I saw where one vending or one store, I think, in Germany had replaced all of its Russian goods with sunflower seeds. Symbolic gestures, but gestures, nonetheless. And now we come to Mikhail Fridman. Bloomberg News reporting that Mikhail Fridman under sanctions by the European Union as of the end of February and by the UK as of the Ides of March. Mikhail Fridman is crying great big tears. He said, "His sanctions are groundless and unfair." And since the sanctions began, he's lost about $4 billion. Crying to Bloomberg, Mikhail Fridman said, "I don't know how to live. I don't know. I really don't know. I have allowance of $3,300 a month. I have to get UK government permission to spend money." Cry me a river, Mikhail. There's news out there. If you just kind of go rooting around for it. Whoopi's back! And opened a can of whoop-ass on The View today. She opened said can of whoop-ass on Republicans for being a little late to the party relative to speaking out on behalf of the Ukrainian people.
On Thursday's episode of The View, a shouting...
Yeah. There's Whoopi.
The president is also getting a mixed bag of criticism from Republicans on how he's handling this conflict. Take a look.
The longer President Biden waits trying to figure out excuses to not offend Putin, it's costing lives in Ukraine.
This administration has been far too slow, not only in their implementation of sanctions, but the lack of completeness.
That's
at
least Stupidnik.
The Ukrainian people need those MiGs, and they need them now. They needed them yesterday.
The problem is this administration has delayed time and again.
Kevin McCreevy.
Situation to be worse, giving the wrong message to Putin.
The Biden team is resigned to failure.
You know who that is.
I mean, I'm sorry. Where were all these Republicans when the former guy in office was holding money hostage, saying, we're not going to give you the money until you give me the information about Bo Biden? What? Not Bo Biden.
Hunter Biden.
I mean, I don't remember them being concerned at all that there was an issue, particularly when the president of Ukraine said, listen, we need this. We need to be able to defend ourselves. And he dangled. Where the hell were y'all? I don't remember you giving a good, blessed...
Well, Whoopi, let me tell you where I was. I was at the United States Department of Defense, mm-hmm. and we were working around the clock to get this aid released to Ukraine, to get security assistance
Why
released.
Was he holding it up?
I think that that's a question that was covered in impeachment, and I think a lot of folks are looking back on the first impeachment and saying, hey, I should have voted differently.
What I'm taking offense at is the fact that these people are suddenly... all concerned now about what's happening.
And how concerned you know? Are they if last Thursday 31 Republicans voted against providing military aid for the Ukraine?
No, and that's
31 Republicans.
Yeah. I don't
so
disagree.
They voted in line with the impeachment. They decided not to try to impeach him because of his actions in Ukraine. And they just last Thursday, Alyssa, voted against giving Ukraine aid. So this is a lot of posturing by the Republican Party, and I think it's despicable, and I think it's disgusting, and I don't think you should defend it.
Well, former Secretary of Defense.
I don't think you should defend it. That's Elisa Farah. She's apparently the new, or one of the new Republicans on the panel. Well, I was trying to get shit to Ukraine. Well, why weren't you able to get... I don't want to talk about that. Maybe more people should have voted for impeachment. Well, the problem was on the Senate side, where you had to have 66 votes. 67. And that was not going to happen. Oh, Lisa. So, we're got about 26 minutes left in the program, and we have $345 worth of challenges that are about to disappear. And we stand at $930 for the fundraising goal. Randy Radar wanted me to maybe mention that because I haven't been hammering on fundraising. So we could knock it down by 708 something. Yeah. Thanks to the bitch challenge, courtesy of Matt in San Francisco. By the way, Matt, if you're still there, I have since you've already gone down the Ferdinand and Imelda route with your Yorkies. If you should happen to get a boy and a girl from the impending blessed event, may I suggest Ron and Nancy? Or if you get two boy puppies, maybe Ron and Tip, because, you know, Brother Deacon Asa suggested that, because, you know, Ron and Tip were such famous friends. But there's something, you know... Ferdinand and Imelda and their children, Ron and Nancy, you got to admit it has a ring to it. Now, let's run over to the stress line and see who we've got. Hey, welcome to the program.
Hey, Robin. Hi.
Hey, Jude. How are you, dear?
Well, I'm fairly good. I'm in my backyard in my bare feet, and I wanted to send this out to Darlene that... As I'm walking, I'm thinking about how she would also enjoy, if she could be up walking, to be able to walk on fresh grass, and wanted to send her my best.
Well, that's sweet.
Mm. And then I also, you mentioned something, I can't remember the phrase, it was symbolism and meaning. Do you remember that just a little bit ago?
Yeah, I said it's what when I said, you know, it's symbolic, but it does have meaning.
Exactly. And it just, you know, it just kind of aligned and went right into what, you know, what women do when they go and stand and for whatever purpose or reason. And I thought that would be maybe interesting to talk about that. What symbolism, you know, does it have an effect? Does it have strength and power in it? Or is it just kind of something not mundane, but just kind of off to the side? We're in the midst of, you know, at work, there's so many, again, I go on about it, but so many wonderful people. And on Monday, a young gal comes up through this huge area that's like 7 racks tall, and she has this newspaper in her hand, and she just starts sobbing. And I put my arm around her. She's vaxxed. We have masks and everything. And I said, "What's going on?" And she goes, "I got this in high school. It was an article that I wrote when they had gone into Iraq, and it was focused on the women." And she couldn't really read it because she was sobbing so much. And I just, you know, stood next to her. And she said, "And here we are now." She said, the women in the Ukraine. And it was those moments, you know, that I thought about that was symbolic for something. Now, does it have a charge? And does it maybe lift something? I come from the perspective that it does, because it's so important with where we are, where we stand each and every day, how it is we impact those that we come across. A few weeks back, I was driving, and there was all this crazy stuff going on, and people were weaving in and out, and I caught myself. I'm like completely human and everything. I mean, I have moments of profanity, but it was like I had to just yell out, "Fuck!" I just had to have a word that doesn't mean something horrible and ugly, but a powerful release of something. And I'm not quite sure where I went with that one, but the symbolism, the moments that we have at hand, like calling with you right now, I appreciate you very much reading that thing about Saturday. I think that's important. And I hope that there will be, you know, maybe just a few. We're going to be down there at 1 o'clock. I'm on the West Coast. Just stay until 2, and then just be aware of where it is if we're supposed to exit or be engaged in more things. And when we have such horrible, horrendous things going on, and knowing, because we're people that think and feel and are led into, you know, really healthy directions, to be so removed from something like the Ukraine. Yeah, we can call our senators, but, you know, at this point, it's pretty much up to us. So to find ways in which an individual can come at the end of the night and feel, yes, I have done something. Maybe it's not huge. Rather than going to bed in a place of darkness and depression or anger. So I think symbolism is important, Robin.
Well, yes, like I said, it has value. It's not the same, you know, in the case of whatever that story was, it's not the same as giving them the power to fight back, but it is a manifestation of resistance, and that does matter.
Mm-hmm.
By the way, Darlene says, "Please tell Jude thank you. That is such a sweet sentiment, and I will have to live vicariously through her. Because of my disability, I would be unable to walk barefoot in the grass without risking a face plant in it. But maybe as spring and summer unfolds, I can get out in the power chair and wiggle my toes in it. And send you,
I love it.
And send you a heart emoji."
I love that. I love that. And one of the other things that I find quite curious with the horn is the inability to be able to connect with people through email. And for a while I thought it was because I didn't make sense, and maybe the community saw me as something, a nice person. But through the years, and different interchanges with people, it seems like it's just a small group of people that share their emails with one another. And I I am so open to be able to engage, you know, on a higher level with people other than just listening through emails or when someone calls in. So I've written to you.
Well, Jude, if you want to put your email address out there for the community, go right ahead. I don't give out people's email addresses on the air because this community is not just listened to by people of goodwill. There are a lot of assholes out there who also listen to this program and will be mean about it because Republicans are shitty people. Okay. Especially the online variety. But if you want to tell people your email address, go right ahead. I'm not being mean about it. I don't want anybody in this community. I get enough hate mail as it is. Okay. And I make it possible for people to reach the program because of the nature of what we do here. But I don't know how far I was into my transition when I got my first my first email reminding me, let's see, you'll always be a man. You'll always have an X chromosome. You know, really, genius? You think I've never heard that before? And I don't want people in our community to be subjected to that just shittiness. And I'm not referring only to gender.
Mm-hmm. Well, it sounds like I triggered something.
No, you didn't trigger anything, Jude. It's just me explaining why I don't think it's a good idea to just sort of put your email out address out there into the stream of consciousness. But if that's if you're willing to take that risk, you know, go right ahead. And that's not me being mean. But I don't want to be responsible for anybody being hurt.
Well, I was just making reference in the numerous times that I've asked, and I don't even know, maybe I shouldn't be talking about it, just have made reference. Like, I really enjoy Matt from down in, you know, in California. I mean, there's so many. I know that you're extremely busy, and I try to really limit what it is I send in. But those odd times that something just kind of sparks inside, and I've, you know, asked to forward, and I know you do. And if those individuals, you know, choose not to, you know, engage back, that's okay. But I just wanted to put it out to people that if they want to journey, I'd love to journey with people, horn community, higher consciousness. And does that soothe you a little bit?
I don't need to be soothed. I'm just talking about facts. I mean, I've been doing this for a very long time, and I know how mean people can be. I don't read every shitty email that comes in. But you know what? I also don't want, I don't want your, you know, it's not for me to say one way or the other, but I don't, you have a beautiful and peaceful spirit, and I don't want shitty people just, and I'm not talking about any members of the Horn family community. I'm talking about the booger eaters who just live to be garbage people and hateful and spiteful. You know, from behind some anonymous email address. Does that make sense?
Oh, yeah, absolutely. Absolutely. But I was just coming from a place that I had been selective about things. And, you know, times are, I don't know what it is about the horn. I have no idea. I can't quite put my whole finger on it, but there it's, I come home and I turn that on as I decompose from the day and look at things. And I just have a deep commitment to the work that you do. And
I know, I appreciate it so very much.
Right. And sometimes it just would be wonderful to be able to kind of expand on a different level when an article comes up or a thought comes up to have, you know, I think about Tracy. you know, when she has her difficulties and when she's really in the midst of her, you know, because we all have to go through different parts of our process. You know, she's like a voice, and I don't. I hope you won't be upset with me. She's like a voice that reminds me of what it would be like down in the belly of those ships that came from Africa. Someplace, you know, ripped from everything. And although at times I can't quite understand where she's at, I understand the essence in her caring and love for the horn and for you. And to me, that's, I don't know if that sounds really strange, but it's a real strong piece at times when she's having to process things. And I just would, I'd love to be friends with her, like so many other people. And it's not imploring that I need anything, but we have so much to do, and we have so much to offer each other if we just have the time and the ability to have some private interchange. So that's my mantra.
Well, if you like we were saying, if you want to put your email address out there, just tell everybody right now.
Oh, absolutely. It's Women Standing, and Women Standing is one word, and it's all lowercase, womenstanding@yahoo.com.
And so hopefully anybody who hears that can reach out, and you can reach out to them. And hopefully something good and positive will come of it. Hopefully none of the shitty people will attack you.
Well, I run into those when I do peace stands. You know, I mean,
I know
they're all around. Yeah, so it's. Well, I hope this has been all right.
Oh, sure, absolutely.
What if I may ask? What's been going on with you and Annette health wise?
What do you mean?
Well, you have been under the weather?
Yeah, I think it's allergies.
Oh, okay.
That's my best guess, because, you know, all my COVID tests are negative, and she tested negative. So it's either, and I don't know, you heard Paul from Parts Unknown's conversation. He talked about the fact that he started getting tormented by pollen back in February. And
I could hear it the second he came on, my heart dropped because you could hear the respirator.
That's my best guess. I just know I felt like, well, she started feeling bad before I did, and then I started feeling like crap on Monday. And by Tuesday afternoon, I couldn't get through hour two and three of the program. I just felt like my head was concreted in, and I'm getting better. But I'm not all the way there yet. But I've got things I have to do, and I've got to get my energy levels up to where they need to be for Saturday and Sunday, because those are big deals.
Yeah, there's a lot going on, and it's kind of tonal. I mean, I can hear just all that's on your plate. So, well, thank you. Thanks for letting me have the time.
Oh, it's quite all right. I'm always happy to hear from you. By the way, Todd said, "So nice hearing Jude's call."
Yeah, that kindred spirit. Yeah. Okay. All right. Well, take care. Be well.
Well, tell me more about what's going on Saturday.
There was, you probably couldn't read it, but I sent you the, I don't know if it's a poster that's gone on or they're putting up.
Yeah, I saw it, but it's kind of a visual.
Yeah, it is. Yeah. And it's all crammed together, but they're going to be walking through the streets of Olympia. And I don't know how the State Patrol and everybody's going to handle it, but they're going to be walking through the streets because they're protesting about all these poor people that have been arrested because of January 6th. I mean, it's so bizarre.
No, I mean, basically, March 19th, 12 to 3 p.m., meet your local Proud Boy.
Right.
come meet the notorious boogeyman and see if the media has been lying to you or not. Now these are the people. I mean, for all I know, it was a Proud Boy who took a dump on the floor of the Capitol and wiped the walls with it. Somebody did. Meet the men who have continuously defended others' right to free speech and are now facing political persecution as a direct result. I'm pretty sure you've seen them not defending free speech, Jude.
Right.
I mean, I've seen them attacking people just standing by and not attacking them. And yeah, I've seen them get into it with people who show up to oppose fascists like them, and make no mistake, they are fascists. So you're going to go to Olympia on March the 19th, and you're going to be there at 1 p.m. Pacific Daylight Time, correct?
Correct. Mm-hmm. Correct.
And you're going to be there how long?
Well, we're going to do a peace stand for an hour and then see kind of where we're directed from there. But see, I've been down there, Robin, so many times, and I know kind of, you know, one has to be really prepared and disciplined. And I know places where the boots go, and they always seem to have their own kind of place to be. I took them in yesterday to my the fellow that Sid, who, you know, polishes them up. And on the strings of the boots, I have my brother's 21 gun salute when he was buried. It's the cartridge in there. And then I have flowers coming out. And I engaged with this older gentleman, and he says, well, what are you going to be doing with those? And, you know, we kind of went into that. And so the boots are very protective. It's almost like a shield. And I don't know. I mean, I just, so anyone that would like to align, you know, just, and I don't know if, you know, if not everyone understands that, but just between one and two, if maybe someone could just have a moment and just be still, I view those as being extremely powerful. And I've watched the effects of it, like when I've been down in, you know, down on the border and gotten caught in situations, I've just felt that I was never alone. I was never ever alone.
I don't think you are. So when you say align with you, explain to people what you mean.
If they could just take a moment, I mean, just turn your, maybe some of the women, they turn their, the dial on their stove, and when, you know, an hour comes up, it goes off. And then they, just for a few moments, they think about the boots and flowers and whatever it is that's within them. But if they would focus on where those boots are in Olympia at that time, that would be, I think, and I don't know how that sounds, Robin, because, you know, we talk about it, but I just have to tell you, my life is so empowered and so exquisitely beautiful.
Yes.
With the people that I have come in contact with, that there is something in the essence of this that I would lay my life down for this. And it's a culmination of all different issues. Black Lives Matter. We were out at Quantico, you know, for Bradley Manning, just everything under
Chelsea,
the smoke,
yeah,
since 2000. Chelsea Manning, everything imaginable, and those women, and sometimes men, you know, when I reconnect with them, have had a sense of something different. Now, it's not like, you know, some kind of window opens and light comes down, but there are moments when one can really be still with inside of themselves. And those are real precious moments, because it's rich soil for what the intention then comes out of us. And,
well, the way you describe it seems a very, and pardon me if I'm getting it wrong, it seems a very Buddhist, a very Zen approach. Am I getting it wrong?
Probably so. And in the midst of something that seems just chaotic, but to not do something when all this is going on in Ukraine. I mean, we can talk about it, we can analyze it, and do all of that. But, you know, when action comes, and that's where that symbolism comes back in, does the symbolism of taking something out or being conscious for a moment in time, does that have power and strength? I say it does from my perspective, and I know there's millions of other people that believe the same. Now, I know it's not going to flip everything into some kind of, you know, paradigm of everything's perfect, but...
Well, and the reason I ask, and I do not wish to be perceived as trying to present, you know, a diametrical opposite or anything. It's always been my understanding, Jude, that Women's Standing was conceived as a peace movement.
Oh, exactly. Yes. Yeah.
And
it was conceived.
Go ahead.
It was conceived through Mike. It was 2006. I was cleaning, cleaning a laundromat in Fremont, and I had Mike on, and it was at 6 o'clock, beautiful summer afternoon, and he starts talking about Israel had attacked Lebanon, and there was a photo in the New York Times that he started describing. And, as you know, he's so articulate and visual when he, you know, goes to be able to, you know, talk about what he has to. And it was the... It was a photo of a young mother being dug out with her infant, like a small infant, like maybe a couple months old, from great big boulders. And I closed the laundromat and went across the street to Moses' store, the Yemeni's man that kind of was the center of Fremont. And there was one copy left. And I looked at that picture, and it still sears me, I mean, to my core, even talking to you now. Well, I ended up going down the street to a shop, and a young woman, I said, you have to go with me. I said, I have to do something. And she said, what do you want to do? And I said, well, let's just... And then the North 45th Bridge in Seattle came up, and that's the overpass that leads to the University of Washington. So she closed her shop up, and as we left, she dropped in this flower shop and brought out two white flowers. So her and I and Gabrielle went and stood on the North 45th Bridge facing south. And all this strength and all this traffic and all this energy. And we just stood there having no idea why we were doing that. So then every single Sunday for the next 6 months, either I or Gab or some other women would go and stand on that North 45th Bridge, always getting stopped. It's a four-lane bridge. Police always pulling over. Hear the doors shut. Police, you know, coming from different sides because people had reported someone was going to jump. Well, they finally understood what it was I was doing. And then 6 months later, as I'm leaving, all of a sudden, the combat boots just come to me. I mean, I just have to be honest and authentic. Just the visual of combat boots. And Gavin and I took off and went down to the Navy surplus store, or the Army surplus store there in Seattle. And we spent about 45 minutes trying to find a pair of Army shoes, not even knowing what we were looking for, and we found the most majestic pair that traveled for years and years until someone during a peace band, after I'd gotten done and my daughter had had surgery and I had been communicating with her, ended up taking the boots. And in those boots, there were the names of soldiers who family members that I encountered while doing peace bands wrote down in their handwriting, and those were inside of the boots. And all of it was gone. So I went back in and found another pair of boots that kind of spoke out. And these are Air Force boots. They're jumper boots. And Sid, who always keeps them beautifully polished and, you know, and respectful. So it was to honor the service members and the lives. And then it had its own kind of expansiveness just to be able to be aware of what's going on all over this pale blue dot. And it incorporates so much. So, yes, it is for peace. And peace sounds really impossible.
Well, no, I asked that, Jude. I asked that, Jude, because I'm extremely conflicted right now. I see all of this horror coming out of Ukraine, and we've seen it in so many other places, and we've seen it in places where the United States didn't seem to give a tinker's damn.
Mm-hmm.
But, you know, we weren't talking about sending them little 5-pound drones that can take out a tank, but now we are.
Mm-hmm.
And there's something about the hypocrisy of it, or something about it that feels kind of hypocritical. But by the same token, I understand that, you know, you can't silence the muzzles of tanks with lawyers stuffing extraordinary writs in the muzzle. That sometimes force must be met with force. I mean,
oh, I'm not saying that I.
No, I'm not saying you are either. But I'm wondering how you find any intersectionality between an urge primarily toward peace, when it seems like the only answer is war. I mean, that bugs the hell out of me. I mean, it doesn't. Don't get me wrong, because I feel like I'm probably. I'm not. I'm not saying that they are mutual. Well, I mean, peace is the absence of war, is it not? And the only way it seems to have peace here is to forcibly eject the invaders. Mm-hmm. And I don't get the sense that they can be politely asked to leave.
But you and I can't do anything about that.
No.
Other than
not a damn thing. Yeah. I mean, I know there are people who do this kind of work who are out there howling for blood. Mm-hmm. And, you know, maybe some on the right wing. I mean, there was that clip with those Republican members of Congress saying, you know, they need to have those MiGs right now. Mm-hmm. And it's not even a sure thing that would get the job done. Might do something, might make matters better, might make them worse. Mm-hmm. And it would be great if we hadn't got into this, but it's like that Chris Hedges article I was talking about earlier. We can go over the myriad horrifying, bloody, murderous mistakes that we have made as a country and make them we have to our eternal shame. But the fact that we have made those mistakes does not mean that we lose that we lose the right to try to correct a mistake as it's being made. Mm-hmm. And so, you know, I think with what you're doing Saturday, it has a much more domestic vibe to it, because it is something that you can affect. Mm-hmm. These Proud Boy thugs, and I'm sure it's a fairly solid bet that Antifa will probably show up, because, you know, wherever the fascists show up, Antifa follows, because that is part of their mission, is to actively oppose fascism, and these guys are fascists. They're not defenders of free speech. They're punks, and they're thugs, and they were actively involved in planning the overthrow of constitutional governance here.
Yes.
And so, you know, I'm sure you will be focused on the horrors in Ukraine, but you will also have before your very eyes horrors all our own. Does that make any sense?
Oh, absolutely. But like when I wrote you in that email, and I don't even know if this is an appropriate phrase to say, it's the least I can do. The least I can do is go out and be present to something that has a potential. You know, that down in Portland when one of those prayer warriors were killed, the boots had just left there like an hour before. I mean, it just, I don't know. I mean, I hear what you're saying. I hear what you're saying, Robin. But my particular walk and those that seem to somewhat understand it, we just are present at different times in different places. And we can't necessarily look at trying to balance everything out. It's something small that I do that I am very grateful and very honored to be a part of.
Absolutely. Because you know, you remind me of the line that is spoken at the end of Arthur Miller's Death of a Salesman. when Willie Loman's wife says, attention must be paid. Attention must be paid. And of course,
that's
that play is a great, one of the great American tragedies. Shorty in L.A. just wrote and said, Robin, Jude, we're synchronized again. I have the speakerphone on. I'm at the laundromat. Get this. So far, four people have tuned in to HeadOn.live. I invite Jude to many women speaking. So.
You have
an impact, Jude. And whatever you describe as being the least that you do is, in fact, much. Much indeed. And Darlene says, this conversation with Jude is exactly why we need a Women on the Front Porch of our own. And I just, and she said, and I just emailed Jude. So you should have a note from Darlene.
Oh. Well, that kind of brings me to tears. Thanks. Thank you very much. Thanks, Shorty. Yeah.
And you are such a dear spirit, and I didn't mean to seem peremptory earlier. I cannot stand the idea of anybody being mean to you.
Oh.
And I hope none of them are.
Well,
I hope maybe the energy of your aura just keeps that garbage out of your world.
Mm-hmm. Well, let that be your focus. Let that simply be your focus. For Saturday when you think about it.
And I will. Because I'll be around. I'll be around that time Saturday. Of course, 1 o'clock for you is 10 for me, and I'll be outside and frittering around the smoker. So I will.
No, won't it be your head? No, you're ahead of me, honey. Before.
Oh,
1, 2, 3, 4.
Okay. Yeah. Oh, yeah. I'm sorry. No, we know.
You can be there at 10.
We know I suck at ciphering. No, so it'll be 4, but I'll still be here. I'll still be frittering around the smoker. So I will take some time and keep you in my heart.
And, you know, Robin, it's also, if you can kind of visualize this for a moment, it's also the awareness that, no, I'm not in Ukraine, and I'm not in that maternity hospital that's down in a bunker or whatever's been bombed, but I am in a place where there are people that want to destroy the country and destroy everything that we hold valuable and dear to us and our families. And that's a small way in which I view those boots can align. And that's how the tapestry starts, sending out its threads around the globe.
You know, one of the most profound images I saw, and there are so many, but I didn't realize, and maybe it's just my general unawareness of modern culture, but they had, I saw a package coming out of Ukraine, a video report, about newborns. And they were newborns who were pre-designated babies that had been brought to term by surrogate mothers. And so the surrogate mothers had done their job, brought the baby into the world for Western parents to come and pick up. But now there is a room full of motherless surrogate babies whose intended parents cannot come and pick them up.
Yes.
And a group of women have come together to care for those babies in the midst of war. And they don't have a blood relationship. They don't have a family relationship to the babies. And the babies, having been born in Ukraine, were not destined to be Ukrainian in terms of a political sense. But they are now very much Ukrainians. And
I hadn't heard anything about that.
And I just sat there with tears running down my face.
Mm-hmm. Thank heavens. Thank heavens for your humanity, your compassion.
But it made me so angry, and I was reminded of a I think it was Sting's Dream of the Blue Turtles album, and I've been having this happen off and on where the music that I listened to in the 80s seems to be coming true now. Because this was all stuff that was written around the Cold War, and so the German band Nena and 99 Luftballons, and it became a hit here in the U.S. in a rewrite in English, or Jackson Browne singing Lawyers in Love.
Mm-hmm.
About Russia becoming a vacation land for lawyers in love. And then I saw those Ukrainian surrogate babies.
Mm-hmm.
And I thought of Sting on that album. There's a song called Russians and Americans, I think it is. And in it, and you know, Sting became sort of put upon for being this ultra squishy liberal who wanted to, you know, save the rainforests and the baby whales in the rainforest and yada yada, and it was reduced to a kind of a comedy or a mm-hmm. sarcastic
yeah.
parody. His impulse was solid.
Or how pathetic.
Yeah, but in that song he said, and it's based on a melody by Prokofiev, Russian composer. And he sings, in Europe and in America, there's a growing feeling of hysteria. There's no economy of political sense on either side of the, or something, no what, common sense on either side of the political fence. And then it talks about how, you know, Reagan says this and Brezhnev says that. And in the end, he sings, or a little further in, he sings, I hope the Russians love their children, too.
I remember that line.
And of course, he was concerned about nuclear war, and it gave me chills the other day when I thought about it, because it gave me chills back then.
Yeah.
There was a line in there, how can I save my little boy from Oppenheimer's deadly toy? And, of course, it was J. Robert Oppenheimer who, upon the explosion of the hydrogen bomb, cited that line from the Bhagavad Gita where he said, lo, I am become death, the destroyer of worlds.
Mm. See, this would be a good dialogue for you to be having with Todd, because he would, I understand parts of it. You have such a grasp, you're so multi-layered, Robin.
Yeah, I'm like an onion.
So multi-layered.
I'm like an onion.
Well, I just...
Well, rosebuds.
Yeah,
rosebuds have layers, too. By the way, Tom in sunny San Rafael says, Jude, I will also be with you there in my heart.
Oh, beautiful. Mm-hmm.
So,
yeah,
you know, you reach
Can
out.
I...
You reach out and you touch lives, Jude. You really, really do.
Well, remember how I shared before? We do this together. We do this together.
Exactly.
I'll leave you with this. I take care of his birthdays at the warehouse because no one does that. And I ran in. There is a wonderful young man, an Asian man, that is always. He's got this energy spark and. And he always knows if I'm off kilter. He goes, Jude, what's going on? I don't even have to say anything. I'll be walking. Well, it was his birthday, and his wife works there. And she goes, you know, I won't say his name, but he's real concerned about, you know, you doing a birthday cake. And, you know, I says, well, I won't do that for him. I said I would never embarrass him. So I started thinking about what I could do for this wonderful gentleman. And I came up with this idea. I got a small bowl. It was an old English tea canister. And I had all the employees in that wanted to participate send either an intention or a birthday thought to him. And we wrapped him, my granddaughter helped me, we wrapped him up like small little scrolls and then put a piece of yarn around it. And they all stood inside of this container. And when it came time, it was just his wife and myself and someone else. I never knew it, but he was born in Nepal. And it was such a beautiful synchronicity of being able to sense something unique and hearing and knowing what he was about and to see a collection of people write in. I wanted to leave. I'm just very grateful, Robin. I'm grateful for the time to talk with you and that you let me go on about things and, you know, that some understand. And
I'm glad that you choose to share it. I truly am.
And your tone is much is a little bit calmer.
Well,
I'll be protected.
Whatever this thing is in my, it has set me back so far on my voice work, it's really hard to, because I work on it every day, but when you're just all gunked up, it's like I revert to former form, and you know, I can't take, because of my high blood pressure medication and everything, I can't take anything with a decongestant in it because I can't handle caffeine. I can't handle anything that behaves like speed. And so that limits me when something like this hits.
Mm-hmm.
But I have, you know, no, I...
it's all good.
It's so weird because all the talk of war and killing and bloodshed and mayhem and massacre... comes from a very brutal place because mm-hmm. it has to be.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Because that's its nature. But you do remind us that that there is another way, and for that I am deeply grateful.
Well, bless your heart. Thanks, pal. Thanks a million. And thanks for everybody that wrote in and those that didn't and aligned. And and when I said it's all good, I meant in terms of the dialogue that you and I have shared and how we've kind of journeyed through different things tonight.
Oh, certainly.
That's all good.
Yes.
Yeah, yeah. So I'm going to give a shout out to Todd and
the whole
community.
You may be hearing from Todd. I don't know.
Oh, I don't know. You know what probably would happen? The sky would open. The sky would open. Take care. Give Annette my tender love.
I will. She is teenager sitting right now.
Yes.
But I will tell her when she gets home.
And you do know how much I appreciate this time, don't you?
Oh, I do. I do. And I thank you so much for it as well.
Because it's not easy, but we have to do what we have to do. And I had to call in and talk to you. So.
Okay. I am glad you did.
The beauty. Okay. Take care, honey.
All right. Have a good night. Bye. And we ran over a little bit this evening, but, well, I'm behind anyway, as it were. Maybe we'll still be safe going into toward the end of March, and maybe we won't get cut off by Podbean and the podcast won't be screwed up like it so often is. You know, we made it through February without getting cut off by Podbean, but that also involves some absences. Nonetheless, that's the program. And listen, I don't know how to put this other than to say that we have, let's see, I'm trying to do the cipher and get it right. So we've got $925 to go in fundraising. There was a massive outpouring of generosity this evening from Paul from Parts Unknown, from Matt, from Ralphs, from Joey, and it's a tremendous opportunity to knock down some of this and help me not sweat every blessed day just trying to keep this all on the air. I just paid a phone. I just paid a power bill that was closer to $700 than it was to $6 for all that clean coal-fired electricity that we use around here, and we don't use that much. But nonetheless, February was hard. Even though it was short, we went through a lot of energy. And those things are hard. It may be a little easier in the warm weather, but warm weather isn't here yet. So if we could knock out those challenges, that would mean so very much. Because it's so very kind when people do that, and all they ask is that other people participate. So hopefully it won't go by the boards. I'll mention it in the post of the podcast. And we'll see where it goes from there. It's good through tomorrow morning. So thank you, everybody. Thanks to all our PayPal and Patreon subscribers. Your kind gifts are what keep this program on the air. Thank you to our a la carte contributors. Thank you to each and every one of you who share your precious finite time engaging in this ongoing conversation. In whatever manner you so choose. Thanks to our all-volunteer staff. Thanks to Sparky and Steve in the chat room. Thank you to our news ninjas. Thank you, Brother Deacon Asa, HeadOn.live. Remember, brand new fresh Malloy on the way, 9 p.m. Eastern Daylight Time. The best place to listen to the first run of Malloy is, of course, HeadOn.live. Thank you, John Fox in Australia. Thank you, Ben Birch, WhiteRoseSociety.org. Billions and billions of hours served from Ben Birch and White Rose. Thanks to the hardest working, bravest people I know, the folks at Coal River Mountain Watch, crmw.net, 20 plus years at the forefront of the struggle for human rights and environmental justice in Appalachia, and now proudly a union shop. Please, please reach out to your member of the House of Representatives and ask them to co-sponsor HR 2073. It's such a tiny thing to ask. The Appalachian Communities Health Emergency Act. It means the world to Appalachia, and we've only been working on it for, God, 10 years this June. Please stay safe. You heard from Paul from Parts Unknown. Don't let his words go unheeded. Don't ditch your masks. I had a note from Nidia earlier, who told me that she had actually ordered from that one website for the masks, and they came back and they were Chinese and they had a horrid odor to them. So caveat emptor. Thank you, Nidia. It blows my mind to think that only 29% of the people of the United States have both shots and the booster. I like to think that our little community, I hope, is part of that 29%. Because it's coming back, and I've got a creepy feeling that this time we're just going to let the dice fly and the chips or bodies fall where they may. Please stay safe. We developed some good habits during the pandemic, the hand washing, the hand sanitizer, the masks. Social distancing is not some form of Maoism, for God's sakes. And you know, if some bleached blonde idiot comes towards you saying, "We need to put our country first," and I'd say America first, but I'd be in trouble again because I got in trouble for running around with them white supremacists. But we need to put our country first. Who gives a damn about Ukraine? Well, avoid that idiot like the plague, because she is. And always, 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 Gina, it's all for you. Later.